the one place where news, opinions, and entertainment are the way you like it. This is Rant EM Radio.
Wanna chat with the guys?
Frank Blink.
That's not how I wanted to announce that either.
This is Brooke's poem about what's going on.
Oh my god, because he's about to fucking read it.
Is the poem called Manjaw?
Jesus Christ. My father has a daughter and I have feelings too, and if I knew your father, I would do the same for you.
Motherfucker, fucker.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am no longer straight edge after having to sit here and listen to that.
There was this one comment that I saw where this one dude said, not even remotely good. So I click on his Facebook and all of his photos are him with his two young sons at TNA events. Ah. You know, if they make a wish kiss, I bet they wish they were a Raw.
Friend Blink.
Brother. There. All fixed. That was it. That was the Hogan audio right there, man.
Don't trust Rick Dunne.
Something gay must have happened to you and you didn't like it, so now you're mad against the world. Like, get over it.
When you said something gay must have happened in the past and they didn't like it, I thought you meant like buying Batman Arkham Knight for PC.
No, it's just like
what, why are you so pissed off? Something gay happened to me. I bought the PC version of Batman Arkham Knight.
Friend Blink.
And the looks on their faces, it almost seems like TNA doesn't have fans. They have victims. And there's people who defend it to me, man. There's listeners that we have that defend it to me. They'll privately message me and they'll literally justify everything. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen. They'll explain every single illogical
justify
thing.
Justify that lollipop.
You see, you could talk about old wrestling without saturating your show. We're in this still work.
Pull those jabs tonight, man. I should introduce you as Ronda Rousey next time.
Rowdy Ronda Rousey.
Thank you, gay Jesus.
Hey. Casting aside their regular work to try this other thing. You see, that's how you become a comedian. You know, that's some initiative.
What about me? And then the crowd goes, what about Beretta?
You can't have that. Can't just give that to Trent Beretta. No way.
What the hell was that? I don't even know what that was.
That was...
It was a good show. It was a good show. People are wondering which show I'm talking about at this point, probably. But it's the pre-show, so you should have an idea.
They should know at this point.
Yeah, exactly. I had a lot of fun with this one.
They pulled it off. Yeah.
Yeah. Welcome to the pre-show, everyone, where we're going to review the last episode, the season finale of Fear the Walking Dead.
Yeah, don't think just because we enjoyed it, I don't have my weekly complaints.
Yeah, well, what are some of your complaints on this one?
Just how quickly pretty much everybody went badass. It was like they went from being aloof to instant badass.
They did have that badass element to them, didn't they? I didn't dislike characters this episode. That shows there was some badassery going on there.
Mm-hmm. And like some of it made no sense.
Like what? Do you want to go one scene at a time?
Let me,
or do you want to
talk about it? We'll get into it. I don't want to jump too far ahead.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. So the show opened with the packing scene, right? They were basically packing to get the hell out of there. They were doing what I would have done.
Yeah. Because they got the information from the soldier and they pretty much knew that like they were doomed if they stayed behind. So everybody's packing up.
Yeah, exactly, because Operation Cobalt is going to be in effect. And, you know, the teenagers were a little confused because they thought things were going good at this point, and Alicia asked about it, not really understanding that they were going to come there and take everyone out. I'm not sure. They didn't make it clear if it was going to be a bomb or if they were going to just come and like spray people down. I mean, ultimately, I assume it was some sort of a bomb because the soldiers were nowhere to be found, right?
Yeah, I'm going to assume it was a bomb also since all the soldiers were clearing out. Because you figure if they're going to kill everybody regularly, they would have just all been lining up to just storm the city in one big wave.
And that they weren't. Ultimately, it just became about them trying to figure out how they were going to get out of there and what they were going to do. Travis and Daniel wind up talking with their captive, which was Captain Adam, I believe his name. Captain Adams. Captive Adams is what we'll call him from now on, because not really much of a captain anymore. You know, who he's basically still tied up in the basement.
Captive Adam.
He basically, they bargained for his life because, you know, Travis didn't want him dead and Daniel was ready to kill him. He figured we got all of the information out of him. Now let's kill him. And they had a debate about the fact that you don't really have to do that. And Daniel was telling him, trust me, you do have to do that. He's of no use. He can go back and tell them, et cetera, et cetera. And we know what happens with that later on.
Yeah, I was just about to say that plays in. As soon as he said it, I was like, it's going to come back to bite him in the ass. And I thought that would have been the end of Daniel right there. Not at that scene, but by the end of the episode, I was like, he's going to get killed.
So after that, they basically make their way to the military compound where they're trying to rescue Nick. And, well, I guess that's the only person at this point because they don't realize that Griselda died from the infection of the wound.
Right.
And then basically, they were waiting for pickup, Dr. Exner. She's waiting for pickup at the ER because she wants to transport all of her patients and her medical staff to the Edwards Air Force Base. And while she's getting ready to leave, she basically gives Liza a choice as to who she wants to bring with her because she can't bring all of her relatives. So she's basically pressured into having to choose between people. And ultimately, she chooses Chris and Travis.
Like at that point, she tells them, yeah, she wants to take Chris and Travis, but she ends up telling her, like, if you're taking Travis, then Travis is going to want to take the wife, and then the wife's going to want to take the kid, so that's not going to work out.
Yeah, exactly. She asked her basically the question, are we talking family, or are we talking immediate family, or family by bond, that sort of thing, which sort of makes her have to make a difficult choice there. But she goes with immediate family, which I guess was the obvious choice for her circumstances.
Right. Say that now, and then when the time comes, they'll deal with it.
Yeah, that was probably her thinking. That moves us to the best scene of the entire thing, which for me personally was when Daniel approached that entire area of the guards and stuff and led the zombies into them, where he just walks up casually like, beautiful night.
Best scene, but it bothered me also.
What bothered you about it?
How does he get, it was like the entire town of zombies. How did he get them? Like, how did he gather them all up? If, prior to him walking up to the tower where the soldiers are at, we see them entering the gate. Like he goes and he puts in the code, like he flips the switch from red to green to red. And then the gate opens up and they go in and you see them all casually walking. You see no walkers behind them or anything. And it's like, now you have this mass collection of a whole town of walkers behind you.
Well, the emphasis on this episode was that the walkers are extremely slow. Keeping that in mind and remembering the information that the soldier, Captive Adams, gave to Daniel, basically was that stadium has been locked shut along with survivors and walkers mixed together. The reason he was so interested in that information was because he already had a preconceived notion that he was going to use that place. So we're basically led to believe, all right, that stadium filled with walkers. I know they're slow now. I got all this information. I'm going to go to the stadium. I'm going to pop the door open, and then I'm going to walk casually down the block with these walkers like a Pied Piper and just bring them to the army shot. So when they wind up there.
Okay, you see, this is why we do these episodes, because I completely, like when the episode starts, that's what they show it before it goes into the actual opening credits and everything. It's the stadium full of walkers with them just banging on the door. I completely forgot about that.
So you thought he just gathered random walkers.
Brought that back up. Now it all makes sense.
Yeah. So you thought he just gathered random walkers and was just sort of like that episode of the Adam West Batman where there's a bunch of mice or something that have bombs in them or some weird shit, and like Batgirl and Batman and Robin are all playing flutes that apparently attract the mice, so they're walking down the street together and all of the mice are following them, like nothing like that.
Was like compared to how like barren the town was before, in my head it was like, where did he get all these walkers from? But now I put two and two together, and it's like, okay, it makes sense.
Yeah, they sort of foreshadowed it, because there was a scene in a previous episode of him standing in front of the stadium, looking at the door, thinking. And I think that's when he came up with the idea where he was going to go there and do this. But unfortunately, the part of that that backfires is that since Exner was preparing to transport all of her patients and stuff, the evacuation decided that they weren't going to come because they're like, screw that. The place has been compromised. And she's trying to assure them over the radio that the place hasn't been compromised. But they just kind of fly off and leave her there.
Yeah. At that point, she's just like, I'm fucked.
Yeah. And then in the meantime, we have Nick in the holding cells with Mr. Strand, who we don't really know much about except the fact that everyone thinks he's awesome. I know the listeners like him. And a lot of you guys mention you like Mr. Strand, who reminds me of Tyrese. But yeah, he's cool to have around. And they wind up.
Why Tyrese?
He looks like him. Look at his face and think of Tyrese. He looks like him in the face a lot. Like he has the same features as Tyrese.
I guess like a slimmer Tyrese.
Yeah, a darker
Tyrese. He's much smaller, though, physically.
Yeah, he's a lot. Well, Tyrese is supposed to be a big dude. That's the only big difference. But if you look at his face, he has a lot of Tyrese going on.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then basically when he goes to unlock the place, it turns out that Nick already had picked the key from his pocket, and he had the key, and he hands it back to the guy. I guess that was just a little display of his abilities there. And then he winds up unlocking the place to get out, but all of the people are begging to get out, and unfortunately he says this isn't a one-size-fits-all. Because of the fact that this key only unlocks their area, I guess, and everyone's in there begging, and they basically leave them behind, which you can't really blame them for in that situation. We don't have time to cause a riot on top of everything else that's going on in this crazy town.
Yeah, yeah. Couldn't be mad at him for that at all.
No, not at
all.
As
fucked up as it sounds. This is a zombie apocalypse, people.
Yeah. So then Travis, Maddie, Daniel, and Ophelia, they're looking for Nick. And what ultimately winds up happening is Travis, Maddie, and I believe Ophelia and Daniel go into the facility, but they leave Alicia and Chris waiting in the car in the underground parking garage with the keys in the car just to keep track of everything. And while that's going on, a bunch of soldiers show up and they decide that they want to rape her. She's going to have a bit of rape, as Cersei says. And Chris isn't having it. So Chris just basically tries to fight them and he gets the ass beating that I expected him to get. But ironically, the soldiers must have not really been that hard up for love because they wind up taking the car and not raping her.
Yeah, yeah. In real life, they would have taken her. But, you know, AMC show.
I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised in an AMC show if she gets raped.
You don't think
also.
So?
Yeah, I just think it wasn't her time. We're not going to have that happen. She was fortunate.
It wasn't her time to get raped.
It wasn't her time. It was a little bit weird, but I'm glad that they didn't go in that direction. Those were the things that basically made me dislike 28 Days Later, I believe it was. It started as a zombie apocalypse and became about soldiers raping people. It was like, wait a minute, this isn't the movie I signed up for. You can't just switch the plot on me midway. Screw that. And then
they're keeping it realistic, man. That shit happens in war. Yeah. I've watched a documentary that shit happens.
Yeah, and Dr. Exner, when she realizes she's not going to be evacuated, she tells Liza to get out of there, and Liza winds up just having to leave. And it became pretty obvious to me what Dr. Exner was going to do. I figured she was going to cross off all of the patients with that cattle gun rather than having them turn. She was just going to go around and she was going to just basically finish them all off.
Yeah, I didn't even think about it, but I figured she just physically gave up and she was going to sit there and let them finish her off.
No. I kind of figured that I think at the end she must have shot herself with the gun, right, when they came back for her. And she was just standing there holding the gun. The implication there was that she's going to off herself next to. But they didn't show it. They didn't make any sound. They didn't do any of the things that they should have done.
That's sort of the implication that they give. And then you don't see anything. So for all you know, she may end up popping up later on, like how we have Morgan in the show, on the actual main show.
You know, just show us what's going to happen. I don't want any strange open-ended shit like that right now. You're only 6 episodes, for God's sakes.
No, that's why they do it like that.
Yeah, that way they could go, look who's back 4 seasons from now. So what happened
else? She's all badass like Carol and shit.
Yeah, what else happened after this entire incident?
I mean, you pretty much, before they actually meet up with Nick, remember, they got trapped. It looked like Nick was actually going to die before they all meet up to get to the
they teased
the Jeep
us with
or
that.
The van or whatever it was they came in.
They teased remember, us with that.
They did. And like he's telling his mom, he's just like, he. I guess he mouths it to her and he was like, just go. It's okay. And then they're doing like the slowdown and it's like, oh, yep. You're going to see him die. Just like how we had Everybody Hates Chris last season. I was like, it's going to be one of those deaths where you see his face like pressed against the glass and he's going to die. But they get it open at the last second because
yeah.
Would it take like 12 swipes of the card at the same speed? Then they finally get the door open and they pull him in.
Yeah, Liza comes running with the security key and swipe, 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 and gets him out of there. So thankfully, Nick had a close call, but he was out of the trouble, basically. And then in the meantime, outside, we had a bunch of shit going on. Soldiers were getting overrun. One soldier got bitten and then he started stumbling around and he stumbled directly into the path of a helicopter. The spinning rotator on the back, which was basically, that was an homage to George Romero's original Dawn of the Dead, where something similar happened. That was their way of paying their little homage there. So good for them with that. At this point it was total chaos. It's exactly what The Walking Dead's supposed to be. All hell broke loose everywhere. There was just things going on. I was happy. I was actually excited. I was worried for characters. They were trying to get out of the compound. You know, it was wild, man. It was really wild. I know you must have liked this one. I was thinking about watching it.
I was legit sitting there nodding my head.
Yeah, you were thinking, this is it. They improved it, right?
It was like, where the hell was this 6 episodes ago? But I figured that's what it is. They were going to start it up slow, and then they give you this big cliffhanger at the end. So it's just like, wow, like these guys are instant badasses. Let's see what they got for us in season 2.
Mm-hmm. And unlike WWE, we actually got to see who Abigail was in this one. But we'll get to that soon. What else before
when
we get to that?
Yeah, the camera panned back and they showed Abigail. I was like, oh, okay, it makes sense.
Yeah, he's not crazy, thankfully. So, yeah, after that, they basically got out of there. Daniel got the news, unfortunately, about his wife, which I thought was sad. He took it very well, though.
They didn't get out of there yet. Remember, we still had, what's his face, the soldier.
Oh, yeah, Captive Adams. That's right. So when they show back up.
Captive Adams, yeah.
Yeah.
When Matt shows up. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When Maddie and Travis and everyone show up, there's Captive Adams. He shows up with the gun because I don't know if we mentioned it earlier, but ultimately Travis decided to let him go. When they first arrive at the facility, Daniel realizes that Travis released him. Yeah, Travis realizes that he released him, and he says, you know, it's your mistake for doing it. And then it is, because when they get back, not only is the car gone from the soldiers, but Captive Adams is there pointing a gun at them. And then instead of shooting Daniel to be even more malicious, he shoots Ophelia. He shoots her in the arm, and when she drops, Travis turns into Rick.
Which, that pissed me off.
That pissed you off, too? Come on, you don't like anything, man.
That pissed me off. It's like, it was a cool scene to watch, but this is the thing that bugs me. It always happens in movies or television shows. Somebody gets shot in the arm and then they drop to the floor like they're dead. I mean, I'm no expert at getting shot, but I'm pretty sure if I got shot, I would have hit the ground and I'd be like, holy fuck, that shit hurt. And I would be screaming. She dropped like she was dead. And then Travis, like you said, he goes into Rick mode. Like when the dude was trying to attack Carl in the woods and Rick pretty much like bit his ear off and shit and went ape shit. You would think Ophelia was his sister or his daughter. Like he showed more emotion than the father did. Than Daniel did. And that kind of like threw me off. It was just like, where is this rage coming from? It was like, why do you care about her so much?
And he beat his face in, man. He beat his face in.
Yeah.
The ref bell was going off. Ding, ding. Officials were coming out and stuff, pulling them back. It was rough. I wasn't expecting that either.
Backstage officials came. Wrestlers came out the back because the officials couldn't hold them back, nor could the referees.
Yeah, no, it was rough. It was definitely a rough time, man. But I'm assuming that guy died afterwards because that place is overrun and he's laying there with no face. You have no face.
You see, again, it goes back to the whole thing of we didn't actually get to see him get killed. So for all you know, he could have like stumbled away. There was other cars in the parking lot. He could have like, if a walker came, I guess like crawled and hid under a car. But they smell blood, so they would have found him anyway under the car.
Yeah, he was in really bad shape. Again, no face, man. Sin cara. Literally.
Faceless.
So, you know, it's one of those things. I don't know. I would like to see him again, just because I would like to see how he survives that ass beating. But I don't think that we will.
I wouldn't put it past them. That's just how Walking Dead is, though. So I guess only time will tell.
Yeah, so we're left to assume they escaped from that compound. We're left to assume that Dr. Exner X'd herself off. Mm-hmm. They can't, again, we know they caught up with Nick and the new guy. And they made it out of there. You know, I was very happy. I expected there to be a big death, but we don't get that yet.
Yeah, you figured Ophelia was going to be the death. And I was actually watching that, too, and they showed them driving towards the house. I was like, are they still carrying the dead body, or did they leave her there?
Yeah, and I do like the fact that Maddie and Strand seem to have some sort of bond there going where he said, you know, I have a feeling we're going to get along, Maddie, that whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. And they wind up at Strand's place, which is a really nice house. I'm wondering if he has something to do with the apocalypse, the zombie apocalypse. Maybe he worked for the company that released whatever or something.
Like he was a doctor or something.
Because he's very well off. And look at the place that he lived at. He just came in like, you guys want any
he's
food?
He's well off, you know? And he seems very calm about everything that's going on. With the exception of when he almost got killed in the hallway. That's the only time I saw him panic. But he seems very calm.
Very cool. Calculated, calm, under pressure, lots of money, nice big pad. I'll go as far as saying that if Travis wasn't around, he would probably invite Maddie for Netflix and chill. Don't you think? Netflix and chill?
But I mean, remember, that's how he got, I forget the other guy. He's unimportant. Travis's neighbor. When we first meet him and he's in the cell with him and he was like, oh, let me see your wife. And he was like, oh, she'll be well off for the next guy to take care of her. Like, I wouldn't put it past them.
He's a Netflix and chill guy.
Kudos to him, man.
Yeah.
However you get your tang, you get your tang.
A man has to have his priorities. Look at that. Out of all the things, look at the guy we're rooting for here. So it turns out that Ophelia is going to survive the gunshot wound. Liza gives her a little medical help and tells them that it's survival and stuff with her at the place. But unfortunately, the same can't be said for Liza herself, because ultimately what winds up happening is we see that she was bitten on her side. Like, what if they had a Walker bit her ribs? If anyone's familiar with Ring of Honor, it reminds me of Scum when Kevin Owens was with the zombie princess, Jimmy Jacobs, and they were fighting someone. I don't remember who, but he had him in, like, the abdominal stretch, and then he pointed to Jacobs and said, bite his ribs! And Jacobs, like, bit his ribs, and I thought, that's an awkward offense. But it was just one of those things. Apparently, she got bitten the damn ribs, man. She had like the big teeth marks there. She said she
figured that somebody was going to get killed in the building. Because remember, all the lights were flashing on and off. You couldn't really see. And at one point, it looked like she got pinned down and like they bit her. But then, like, when she got out and she looked fine, I said, okay, I guess we're actually getting a clean finish this season. Like,
nope, everybody's no clean okay. Finish. No suicide mission, Mass Effect 2. This is going to be the real deal. You're going to lose somebody in this one, unfortunately. And that's what basically wound up happening. And the messed up part about it is that she says that she didn't notice until they got clear. And I'm thinking, if someone bit you like that, you'd fucking notice.
You didn't feel the stinging sensation on your ribs. Like, come on.
They didn't nick you. He took a bite out of you. He took a bite out of crime.
I get the whole thing. You can say the whole thing of the adrenaline got her rushing. And like, now that she knows they're safe, the adrenaline, like, it ran out and she's feeling it now, but I'm going to call bullshit on that.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and do that too.
Even though of all the things that bothered me, that didn't bother me, but I'm going to call bullshit on it.
Yeah, well, at least they were talked out of going to the desert. Strand managed to talk them out of doing something extremely stupid.
Right. To go to, like, I like to call his place the PS3 pad.
The PS3?
You're probably sitting there as, why the fuck am I calling it the PS3 pad?
Yes,
I'm going to explain this right now.
You're talking about home. You're talking about
your
home.
House and PlayStation home. That's what his place reminded me of.
Yeah, I do see. I see the similarity. Yeah, I was on home.
I mean, like, I probably wasted a shitload of money on home.
I was in the home beta. As a matter of fact,
it was always a beta. It never became a finalized thing.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that typical Sony fashion. Ah, yeah. Shots fired.
Yeah, but like, on that, not to stray away from the story, that, like, the Walking Dead thing, but I wasted money on that shit. I bought the Ghostbusters pad. There was like a nighttime pad, and then there was the default daytime pad that looks like the house that Strand has in Walking Dead. So I had like three houses in that game.
Yeah, very unfortunate for you, because that led nowhere.
Yeah, it led to me pretty much. I could have like wiped my ass with my money and like flushed it down the toilet, and it would have been the same effect.
Tisk, tisk, tisk.
Live and learn.
All right. Well, just to wrap up the last scene. So when they're on his little house by the sea, Nick asks him what the hell the plan is from here on. And he tells him it's to go to Abigail, which, when he looks through the binoculars or the scope or whatever he has there, they see it's a boat. It turns out that Abigail is a boat in the middle of the ocean that he has. And their objective, I guess, going into season 2 is going to be to get to Abigail.
There was one thing that bothered me with that. It was, again, I have like these random things that bother me.
Okay.
I don't know why specifically in that scene when he's talking about Abigail, I think back to when they were still back in the town, when Chris is sitting on the roof and they see the person flashing the lights in the distance. I assumed that we were going to get to see who was like holed up in that place. We never got that answer.
Because at the end of the episode, when Travis is looking back up at the roof across at that place, we see flashing lights, but the rhythm of these lights is a little bit more inconsistent, and it sounds like it's making a popping sound. So they lead us to believe that the soldiers listened to Travis, and instead of going to help, went there and gunned the people down, and Travis soared from the rooftop. Because if you go back and look at the end of that episode, he goes back to check that light, and you see flashing lights, but it looks more like it's going glock, 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 and like very fast.
Remember seeing the flashing lights? I didn't pay too much attention to how much the pattern had changed. You could totally be right about that.
You can hear it too. So Travis is looking and he realizes that when he tipped those soldiers off, as opposed to helping people, they were shooting them.
Mm.
So just to show that the soldiers were no good in that sense. But not use it all the time.
But wait, we didn't fully cover the end. Remember the whole scene by the beach where, why am I forgetting her name again?
Oh, Liza, right. There was a scene.
Yeah, Liza's there and she's like, she knows she has to do it, but she's not prepared to do it. She asks Madison to do it, but, like, don't let Travis do it because it would break him. Travis ends up walking on them, talking about it, and he's like, oh, we can save you. And she's like, no, you can't. And he was like, no, we have the supplies. And she's like, trust me, I know, like, you can't save me.
She's basically seen what it does, and she understands the problem with this and explains to them that they all turn.
It's funny that she already knows what it took Rick and his group, like how many seasons to figure out. Like, they figured out that it was a virus, everything's in the air, and they're all already infected. They didn't learn that until, like, what, season 2, season 3?
Mm-hmm. They learn it a lot sooner in the comic book, but in the show, they learn it later on.
She knows it already, and she was just like, I'm done. Like, there's no saving me. And he eventually takes the gun, and he has to off her.
Yeah, very unfortunate, which Chris hears it from far away and comes running and finds his dead mother. And Maddie and Travis are in the water. There's like a sad, dramatic scene of him on his knees crying with Maddie embracing him from behind and the waves washing over them.
That bugs me, too.
Jesus, even that? Come on, man. What was wrong with that?
I figured, like, as soon as he shot her, he should have dropped the gun, dropped to his knees, and that should have been the scene. There shouldn't have been a scene of him walking away from the body. Or if he was walking away after he shot her, take at least, like, maybe 5-10 steps away from her, then drop the gun, then have the dramatic scene. It looked like he walked, like, pretty far away from the body. I feel like it would have been more impactful if the final scene was you seen the son holding her, crying in the background, and then he's just like a broken shell of himself, like just leaned in the water with Madison holding on to him.
Well, now you're just backseat directing, though. You're like a Martin fucking Scorsese over here trying to get the scene. Yeah, I like what they did. We can't, you know, try to relate with these people's state of mind.
It worked. That's how I would have done it, but it worked. I'll give them that.
Yeah, and now that we've reviewed all of the episodes, I guess we get to rate the season, which I'll say ultimately it was a slow burn, which is funny because slow burn is something I haven't heard used very often. But it's being used, and I've only usually heard it as a wrestling term, but everyone's using slow burn. It's trending, if you will. So I'm going to say that the season itself was a slow burn, but they made up for it. They were building up to that conclusion at the end of the 6th episode. And in its defense, it was only 6 episodes. I know we were hard on it at times, but it does have its moments, and it is something that can carry over. And they left on a high note. That way, when they do come back next season, the last thing you remember doesn't suck.
Yeah. I mean, we've been hard on it every episode except for this one.
Yeah, this one was fun.
Rightfully so, because there was a lot of stuff that just aggravated me with the stupidity of the characters, which is why it was very off-putting to see how quick they all went to, like, badass mode. Not that I'm complaining. I like that they're all in badass mode. We're going to see where they go from here.
I guess we're done covering the episode, right?
Yeah, I mean, that was the last scene.
Yeah,
except for that weird pan away shot into the water, just going further and further into the water.
Yeah, just showing us where they are and where the boat is and things of that nature. So I say overall, I give it a 7 out of 10.
You gave it one, like, level higher than I did. I would have given it a 6 out of 10.
Yeah, overall good. My favorite scene, still Griselda, her death scene. Yeah, like, for anyone that wasn't here last week, we're going to just, in celebration of the end of this season, we're going to run a little bit of Griselda before we start the main show.
Llegué a ti siendo una niña, pobre y estúpida. Me comprometí contigo muy joven porque no conocía
a tu naturaleza. That's one hell of a performance, man.
Vi la cara del diablo. Es igual a la tuya. Me enseñó su rostro. Es igual al tuyo. Es igual al tuyo. Es igual al tuyo. Todas esas noches.
Griselda, mírame.
Todas esas noches. Mi esposo y yo juntos. Esperando que rompieran esa puerta.
Griselda.
Las caras.
What is she saying?
two characters dead. Rest in peace.
She's not making any sense.
One supposed.
It's Liza.
Well, actually, three characters in this scene are all gone.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
What better way to pay tribute to the season than to play the one scene that has three dead characters?
Arráncame la piel. Arráncame la carne.
Love how she says that. Arráncame la.
Roll the R's.
Hell yeah.
No voy a preguntar
That's
por
good
qué.
Spanish right there.
No voy a preguntar por qué. Conozco tu naturaleza. Tú conoces la mía.
We'll ever get
it
tired
doesn't
of that.
Get old.
No, it really doesn't. On that note, let's launch the damn show.
This is the Talk Brunch podcast, available at talkbrunch.com, also on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Talk Brunch. Where the heels are all baby faces. And now introducing the two guys who run the whole thing, the tag team champions of the internet, and your hosts, Rick Dara and Nick Russlin.
What's up, fellow marks? Rick Dara here, as always, with Nick Russlin for episode 77. And man, am I glad to be here. This place is my therapy. I'd go nuts without it. And man, do we have a lot to cover this week. Crazy stuff going on. And we also have a lot of new listeners here. So shout out to our friends over at RantEMRadio.com. We're now part of the RantEM Radio family. So go check them out. Lots of cool shows there. The Rant, which we're going to be on Tuesday. We'll be on The Rant on the live show. We're going to be shooting the shit with them and just checking everything out. It's good. I want you guys to go and just check out the shows. Tell me what you think. Overall, you're going to get tired of our shit sometimes, and when you feel like going to see something else, go over there, you know? It's almost like me. One of my favorite foods is like french fries, for example, but you can't have french fries every day. Imagine if you had french fries and bacon every day. It would be a great world, but you'd die really quick, right?
You could only have so much awesome. You have to take it in moderation.
Exactly. That's why I compared us to bacon, because it's fucking awesome, and Americans love that shit. But ultimately, you know, when you feel like just having something different, just go check them out. We're going to be on their shows. They're going to come on our shows. We're going to all mingle and stuff. Part of the reason.
Yeah, we're not saying these guys are like salad or anything like that either. We'll say they're like pizza. The other awesome.
Exactly. Just another type of awesome. And sometimes you can have bacon with your pizza. And that's what it's going to be like when we're on the Rant tomorrow.
A whole mingle of awesome.
Yeah. One of the reasons we got into this was because we were networking. We wanted to network with other like-minded wrestling people and pop culture people, comic book people. They have Freaks and Geeks on there, which is another really cool show. They have What Are You Reading, which is a show all about comic books. And you know, we're heavily into comic culture. And one of the main reasons why Mick Reslin and I got into this was because of all of the money. No, I'm kidding. There is no fucking money whatsoever. If anything, a lot of the time, just when I use those little sound clips on the YouTube version, they wave their finger at me and say, well, your monetary is going to go over to the people that made that song that you use for 15 seconds. And I use them anyway. Fuck them.
You've been waiting to tell that story for months, haven't you?
No, I really haven't, but it just came up. But ultimately, what I'm just saying is, you know, we're doing this. Our purpose is to network with other people, talk to like-minded wrestling fans, have fun. That's the main thing. Have a voice and have fun. That's what this is all about. That's why we're expanding our world a bit. That's what I meant when I told you guys last week we were going to open you up to an entirely new world.
It's a new day. Yes, it is.
Yeah, it sure is. Shout out to Phil from Turnbuckle Throwbacks. He's the friend and the person that put all of us into contact with each other, which is ultimately what began all of this joint venture with all of us. So we're very excited about that. So where do we start? I guess we're going to go into just some dirt and stuff, right?
That works. I mean, are we going into good dirt or bad dirt?
I don't know where to begin now. Now you have me tempted. I'm nervous now. What kind of dirt do you want?
Well, I mean, we want to keep asses in the seat here, so we're not going to cover anything TNA yet.
There's a lot of fun stuff going on there, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a happy middle ground though. If you want. Yeah, it's one of your favorite things.
I got a flow. You got a what?
I got a flow.
I got a flow.
You got a flow. So let it go.
Yeah. Brother.
Yeah, we're starting Hogan flow. Hulkster flow, if you will.
Earlier. I knew there was some Hulkster flow this week. I knew it.
Yeah. So just to get right into it, Florida judge Pamela Campbell on Thursday allowed Hulk Hogan access to Gawker's computer system, giving him his most important victory in years. Hogan believes that there's evidence on the hard drives that'll prove that they leaked the tapes intentionally with the racist remarks on them, and that Gawker leaked these tapes in July so that it would hurt him, and that it would hurt his invasion of privacy lawsuit that he filed against him. So he brought this suit to Gawker after it published parts of the sex tape. And the judge has also rejected requests for media outlets to unseal certain records, which include the 3-year-old sex tape at the center of the dispute. The trial, which was originally scheduled for July 6, was recently pushed back to March from its original October postponement date to allow for the search of possible leaks to the Inquirer and things of that nature. And a Gawker lawyer claimed that the 6-member team never received the recording of Hogan's rant. So they're essentially saying that these lawyers violated the order, is what the lawyer told the judge. But we've behaved honorably. So right. They're going to be asking both sides to agree by October 15th on a forensic expert to search through Gawker's computers and that office to find out who did what. And apparently Hogan attended this hearing dressed in all black. And when he left the courtroom, he said, "It's a beautiful day, brother." No, he didn't say brother. He didn't say brother, but I just wish he did. He just said, "It's a beautiful day." But on the flip side of this, Hogan's happiness is short-lived, brother, because his sex tape will be shown in the courtroom. Judge Pamela said that when the video is played for the jury at trial, the monitors will be turned in a way that only the jury and the involved parties and the counselors will be able to see the video. The public and the press won't be blocked out of the courtroom when the video is being played, though. And the pooled camera won't be turned off during this. So you'll be able to hear the grunts, brother. And you'll be able to see.
I am so glad that I just recently served my jury duty.
And you'll be able to see the grossed out faces of the people as they're watching this thing. But I have a question for you that I think that's important about this whole thing. And I guess for the listeners too. I want to know if you guys think that Hogan's ultimately going to have to take the stand, you know, because I personally feel like that he's going to have to take the stand. Like, it don't help.
Oh,
to
yeah,
hide.
Definitely.
It definitely doesn't help to hide at all.
Stand, it don't have to hide.
Do it, Hogan. Just do it.
If you hurt my friends, then you hurt my pride. I gotta be a man. I can't let it
I couldn't let that one slide myself. That's what's going on with Hogan. The dark clouds don't stop forming there either, because Hulk Hogan lost his deal with Pez. Do you remember Pez?
He had a Pez deal. They still make Pez?
Yeah. They still make Pez. And they're quoted here. They explain why they let the deal go here. They're quoted here saying that that's not the kind of head they had in mind, Hogan. No. They did not say that. Only in my twisted Seth MacFarlane style imagination did they actually say that to Hogan. They just don't want him in the thing now. Instead, Undertaker will be replacing him alongside Rock and Cena, who were originally going to be in it anyway. So basically,
yeah,
people were black friends, basically, just to have the right thing going on here. And it's just funny to hear about this, like Hogan, the sex tape, the Pez deal. It's weird because I've been thinking lately that wrestling has progressively become one of the funniest things ever. You know?
How so?
It just seems like the internet merging with wrestling culture has merged it into like a similar creature, as Jeff Hardy says in his new music. You know, it's not the attitude era, but there's definitely like a different attitude. Like if you factor in Twitter, the dirt sheets, podcasts, even us right now here doing this, having this conversation and people listening and laughing all along, it's become a chain of entertainment through various platforms and different forms of media. Maybe not totally intentionally, but I'm having fun.
Yeah, you know, I was going to say I'd never really thought about it like that, but you're making points here. Very valid points.
This is the entertainment now. Like, sure, we watch Raw and all the wrestling, but all of these different things come together and make it entertaining. Just as hearing the things that are going on, the crazy antics. Like, you couldn't book this kind of stuff. But you know what? The sun parts the clouds for Hogan's cloudy day. Why do I keep giving him weather references? But anyway, because his content has returned to the WWE Network.
I thought you were going to miss that news, but you got it.
nah, man, you underestimate my power.
Okay, let's put it like, I thought you wouldn't have cared enough to cover it.
What, did his stuff back? Nah, Hulkster flow, yeah. Man. You got to cover everything in Hulkster flow. You know, you got to cover the good and the bad. It's a victory for Hogan, brother.
All right.
Yeah, all right.
No, there actually was one more piece of Hogan news.
Oh, is there him, really?
The Ric Flair podcast that he's supposed to be doing.
Oh, what's going on with that?
He just posted on Twitter, and he's pretty much saying, really pumped to do Ric Flair's Woo podcast. Doing it at 2 p.m. today. Don't know if it's live or taped. It doesn't matter, brother.
Well, I think at this point, Hogan probably doesn't like taped.
I think he's happy to get work.
Yeah, pretty much.
He's like Virgil now.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it makes sense. You know, he's going to be Lonely Hogan soon.
Imagine.
All right. Well, that's been this week's Hulkster Flow.
I got a flow. You got a what?
I got a flow.
I got a flow.
You got a flow. So let it go.
Yeah. Brother.
All right. So now do we want to talk some TNA? You sound so enthusiastic to talk about it.
I mean,
they had a pay-per-view. This is their weekend. It's not like we're imposing. They are.
This is their weekend. Come on.
There was a taped house show in Madison Square Garden. We're going to pin that against Bound for Glory, the biggest pay-per-view of TNA.
Is this their biggest? Is it?
Bound for Glory is their big pay-per-view.
They have one more after this, isn't it?
No, but they have one more. But Bound for Glory is like their Mania, isn't it?
Is it?
I thought it was, isn't it? It's not Slammiversary. Slammiversary is like their number two.
I mean, I guess. Yeah. I guess this is their oddly placed WrestleMania.
Yeah.
I don't want to cover anything TNA, but I mean, it has to get done.
It does have to get done.
Let's get it out of the way.
All right. I don't want to go into too much detail, but Pope and Josh Matthews were there, and they seemed happy to be out of that cubbyhole that they usually keep them in. And Josh Matthews called it the greatest wrestling roster ever assembled.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Greatest ever assembled. The funny thing about this is they were teasing. TNA was teasing, and the Pope was teasing over the week that there was going to be a third person, a third commentator person.
The third commentator. I remember commenting about this, and it's like, oh, they're like blatantly ripping off WWE style now.
Yeah, so all week they were dropping hints about who the third person was going to be and what was going to happen, and then no one fucking showed up.
No, they did show up.
No, well, we're going to get to that. There was a fan tweet. There was a fan tweet where people said, why aren't people reporting that the third announcer, quote unquote, no showed for Bound for Glory? I thought it was just the Black Pope messing around. And then Pope tweets back and he says, smart man, if you're a fan and follow Impact Wrestling YouTube shows, then you know Little Pope is a personality. And what they're talking about was there was a Little Pope action figure on the table with them, and that was the third person. You see how ridiculous that is?
If they want to go by that logic and say that a third person was joining in them on the commentary team, that's complete and utter bullshit, because that action figure has been sitting there for weeks now. I actually pointed that out in an episode about how they look like a ridiculous commentary team with that action figure sitting on the table.
Yeah, so they shouldn't even try it. They basically didn't get the third person. The person no-showed, and they tried to cover it because that's what this company does. It's ridiculous that there's always a big announcement, and then the announcement always leads to nothing. Which is really disappointing. Dixie also, she had a major announcement. Did you hear about that one? All week last week, she was basically saying that there was a major announcement that was going on. Have you heard it yet?
I have heard, like, I saw the thing, I clicked on it, and when I read it, I was like, this was the news.
Yeah, well, you know what, man? I haven't heard it yet. Oh, you're here. Don't spoil it for me, because I'm very excited. I'm going to go listen to Dixie's announcement. I'm going to see, can I Google it or something? How do I find this Dixie announcement?
I don't think there was audio for it.
No, there was audio. She made an announcement.
She made an announcement. Oh God. So you must have this and you haven't listened to it yet.
No, I haven't. I'm going to look and see what this announcement is though. Give me a minute.
Roll that beautiful bean footage.
That's not good. Here we go, man. TNA announcement. Fuck yeah. I'm so excited. Big announcement.
I got the drinks. I got the popcorn, the chips, the dip, everything. I'm ready.
Today, I'm thrilled to announce to you and the world that in just a few weeks, from October 19th through the 24th, TNA stars and executives will be in India for a huge media tour and talent search. In association with our incredible partner, Sony 6, TNA's head of talent and TV, John Gabort, along with our stars EC3, Rebel, and India's own Mahabali Shira, will embark on a tour filled with media interviews, talent searches, and great appearances. The people of India have embraced TNA Wrestling, and we're experiencing incredible growth. In fact, Impact Wrestling and other TNA programming has helped launch Sony 6 to become the most watched sports channel in all of India.
Bullshit.
So be sure to visit ImpactWrestling.com for all the news and updates on TNA's extensive media tour and talent search later this month in India. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at Impact Wrestling, and I'm at TNA Dixie.
That was the announcement. You see what I mean? People have been defending TNA lately, but this is my problem with it, because I've heard people getting heat, giving Matt Hardy heat for winning the championship. I've heard heat for Hurricane Helm showing up at the pay-per-view. I don't have anything against Matt Hardy or Hurricane or the North Carolinian wrestlers or anything. My issue is TNA as a company. This kind of shit makes them seem like an absolute joke. The big announcement that they were building up was that Mahabali Shira, Rebel, and who, EC3, were going to go to India?
Yeah.
Don't you find that like a little bit stupid that that was the announcement?
That's a big deal for them over there, man. You know, when they're not like stealing your shoes in front of the Taj Mahal and they're not providing fake tours, they want to sit down and watch their TNA. That was a Slumdog Millionaire reference.
How much of a tour is it, though, if one of the people... if one of the people they bring is actually from India? It's a cost-cutting tactic, because they don't need to deal with whatever red tape there would be to send a foreigner to India when one of them is from India. That's like if we had a big announcement one day and the announcement turned out to be that it was that on Friday you're gonna come to my house. Like, you've been to my house on Fridays. We're not that far. It's a stupid announcement, and no one's going to care if you're at my house. So this doesn't make any sense. Like, oh, Mahabali Shira, who's from India, is going to India on a tour. That was the announcement? Come on, man.
And what? He is the only Indian guy that they have within the company, too, right?
I guess so. But still, it just doesn't make any sense to me that that's an announcement that requires the entire world. WWE does tours all the time of places overseas. And they don't show those on their YouTube channel. They don't make it a big deal. They don't act like they're proud of it. It's just business as usual. These guys made an announcement.
It's just business. Sometimes when I'm at the airport, I just see these guys just like walking through, and I'm like, oh shit, I guess they have a tour overseas.
Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense that that was the big announcement. These are the things that make TNA come off ridiculous. And I know you hate this man. I know you hate his guts. But Vince Russo released a statement after hearing that, and that same thing that we just listened to. And I want to hear Vince Russo's reaction.
Let me hear it, because you know what? Russo said some stuff last time, and I actually agreed with him. Let's hear what he has to say.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining into this very important announcement. Some huge news pertaining to Vince Russo and the brand as it pertains to India. I am proud to announce that sometime tomorrow around lunchtime, my daughter Annie and I will be attending what is called one of the best India buffets in the state of Colorado, called Little Nepal, Indian buffet in Colorado Springs. Yes, Annie and I will be going to this Indian buffet of supposedly phenomenal Indian food, things such as biryani, momos, idli, gulab jamun.
This is awesome.
Loi bahachor. And Annie and myself
Gesundheit.
Will be going to the Indian buffet Little Nepal tomorrow sometime around lunchtime. Listen, I don't know what Dixie Carter is thinking of. I honestly don't. At this point, she has 12 years at TNA. And she's made lame, huge announcement after huge announcement after huge announcement after huge announcement after huge announcement over the last dozen years. Every announcement has never meant anything.
He's right.
Every announcement has been shat on by fans of professional wrestling. But yet, the big announcement. And the big announcement today is that TNA is going to be conducting a media tour in India with EC3, Rebel, and their Indian star that I can't even pronounce his name. That's the big news.
Mahabali Shira.
Big media tour scheduled for India. I gotta be honest with you, man. I hate to say this, but TNA literally has become a joke. TNA literally has become the punchline in professional wrestling. And it's for reasons such as this, where days in advance, Dixie Carter is going to tease a big announcement Monday afternoon. And that Monday announcement is a tour of India between Rebel, EC3, and the Indian guy that I don't know or care about, nor can I pronounce his name.
Mahabali
this was
Shiva.
The big announcement. Oh, and by the way, Sean Gaborik also is going on the tour. You know what? Maybe Gaborik will stay there. Maybe that's the best news that will come out of this Indian tour is John Gaborik will get hooked on the food. Maybe he'll go to a couple of Indian buffets. Maybe he'll get hooked on the food, want to stay over there and never come back and be head of creative at TNA anymore. Maybe that's the big news that'll come out of this. But
it'll be like outsourced.
Here's the problem with Dixie Carter. You think after 12 years, somebody would learn their lesson. You think you would learn by past mistakes. I know I have. I've made mistakes over the last 12 years, but the difference is I've learned from those mistakes year after year after year of the big announcements, and you're going to India for a media tour. That's what we're all sitting here on pins and needles. Then everybody wonders why Dixie Carter at TNA has absolutely no credibility whatsoever. That's not on the fans. That's not on the people that watch and support TNA. It's not because of them that you have no credibility. It's because you have an owner of the company that hasn't learned over the past 12 years. A tour of India. That's the big news that everybody's waiting about. Unfreaking believable. Dixie, listen, I don't know how you do it, but you managed to top yourself. And that's really that's really the beauty of this. This TNA literally and Dixie Carter as the head of TNA has become like a parody of the wrestling business. Christopher Guest would have a field day with Dixie Carter and the situation at TNA. And here's another thing I heard about yesterday. I got people in high places. I know what's going on. TNA is so hard up and so desperate for money that yesterday at Bound for Glory, they actually allowed the fans to sit in on catering with the talent. Do you hear what I'm saying? The talent wasn't
that doesn't
even
surprise
allowed
me.
To eat by themselves in the little sanctuary they had before the big show Bound for Glory. Dixie Carter allowed fans to come into catering and eat with the talent. Are we that desperate that after 12 years we are chasing $50 bills and $100 bills and making a big deal out of an announcement of TNA going there for a media tour? That, you know, Eric Young can't even have a little Caesar salad in peace before his big match with Kurt Angle. That Abyss can't even have a little macaroni, a little spaghetti in peace before the big Bound for Glory. That they got to sit there and they got to eat with jabrones. They got to sit there and eat with wrestling fans in their sanctuary. This has to be the lowest of lows. We're going to allow now the fans to eat with the talent below the show. Does $50 mean that much? $100, whatever the frig it was? Unbelievable. I have to ask the question, when is enough enough? When is it the end game? When do we realize, you know what, we had a good 12-year run. We had some ups. We had some downs. We made some mistakes. But the fact that we're going on an India media tour is the biggest news we have. And the facts that the jabrones are now eating with the talent, that has to tell you what's next? What's next? Do we get to bathe the talent for $25?
I'd like to bathe Velvet's eye.
Do we get to give the knockouts a back massage for $35, any fan that wants to? Wait, what's the end game? Unbelievable. But listen, man, if there's a top to this big announcement, I mean, if there's a bigger announcement than this, a media tour of India, I really want to be around to see it, because now I got to be honest with you. This is to the level of just the greatest form of entertainment. This is better than TNA can do anything in the ring, than anything those guys can do in the ring. This entertainment of the Dixie Carter decisions of what's a big announcement of, you know, who's going to get to have a baked potato with Kurt Angle for $25. This is the greatest form of entertainment I have ever seen. But listen, I'm going to go to Little Nepali, Nepal, however they pronounce it, with my daughter Annie tomorrow. It's supposed to be one of the best India buffets in the state of Colorado. I'll come back here. I'll let you know how the food was. Until then, everybody, I'll see you next time. And no, nobody's allowed to come and eat with me and Annie. Even if you pay for our meals, I'm not going to let any jabrones sit down with me and my daughter. We're going to eat in peace, a father and son moment. Take care of it.
Should be a father and daughter moment, not a father and son moment.
Father and son moment with your daughter.
Yeah, but aside from that little transgender thing that happened there, I really did like the stuff that he was talking about, man. Like, I got to say, like, and it's funny because this goes back to what I was saying about how now the entertainment is everything. It's the dirt sheets. It's the jokes on the podcast. It's the fun that we all have. It's Dixie Carter trying to pretend she owns a wrestling company. These are the things that make the wrestling business entertaining right now. It's unfortunate that some of it is shitty, but really think about how weird that company is and how out there it is. So as much as people want to say, yeah, you know, TNA this and try to defend them, the few people that are defending them at this point, it's inexcusable, man. This is like an embarrassment.
I mean, this isn't like a new problem either. I remember when I told you a few years back when I went to the baseball show, they couldn't fill the seats and they were offering people. They was like, hey, if you pay an extra $50, you can come sit up in the VIP seats.
Yeah, you see what I mean, though? You see, it's just not doing that good. Their Saturday show in Salem, it had between 250 and 350 fans, and 80% of those were comp tickets.
Awesome.
Okay. And then the Friday show in West Virginia, it only did about 250 fans. And that's probably why they decided the following day to comp tickets, because they didn't want to get numbers like that twice in a row. And I myself have looked at crowd shots and it's empty. And I don't want to hear any of that camera angle shit that you guys send me sometimes about that it was the wrong camera or that the fan was taking a picture from the opposite side or any of that other stuff. I'm just not hearing it anymore. You know, last week we mentioned that they were giving people $5 off of Bound for Glory, or at least I think we mentioned it. And that didn't work either. So they wound up just passing out comp tickets for that too. Their biggest pay-per-view, and they're passing out comp tickets. Can you imagine WWE passing out comp tickets for WrestleMania?
Never going to happen.
You know, just here's some free tickets to fill up our seats. It's WrestleMania. And then we have TNA announcer Joe Dombrowski, who's only worked for the company. I'm just going to point out here that he's only worked for the company for a few weeks now. And he's saying that the photos were being circulated to deliberately show low attendance and that they were taken before bell time or from some other side of the arena. Just like I said, people are going to start saying. And that he himself can confirm 750 fans in attendance. And I'm thinking, how? Did you count them? The place looks empty. And I'm tired of people confirming that the empty venues that we're seeing are not true, that the pictures are false. Rather than tell us and go out of your way to point out that they're not what we're seeing, send us your pictures then.
Right, pretty much.
If by all means, any TNA people, anyone that's defending this company, don't tell me that it's actually full. Send me your pictures of it full. Send me the other side of the fucking arena then. You keep saying this is the opposite side, we're looking at the other camera and everything. Then anyone out there in this entire world, if you can hear me, anyone out there, send me your fucking pictures of the other side of the arena.
Creatures!
Send me your pictures! Show me the other fucking side of the arena. I'm tired of hearing this nonsense and I never see it. It doesn't make any sense. So show us your photos. This Joe guy, who's only been an announcer for them for a few weeks and is already defending them and going to bat for them. You know, take some photos of the other side. Not one person took a picture of it being full. And then the guy goes on to say that he's always found it odd when people go out of their way to disparage or run down a promotion or product that they're still watching while attending their events. And here I'm thinking that when he says always, he must mean 2 weeks because he just fucking got here. What the hell do you know? You know, and then just to justify that a little bit for anyone that does have the right to address it that way, people like us, for example, we watch because some of us have always watched. Some of us do podcasts, reviews, and analytics. We analyze this shit. And because we have an interest in not only wrestling, but in the growth and development and the various transitions of the business itself. We were just talking about how the entertainment at this point comes in all forms, the reality TV, the podcast, all of that. No different than people that watch Wall Street, but don't necessarily trade. It's our interest, and we're running down the analytics of this bullshit. So don't tell me I don't have the right to judge something that I actually watch. That's a contradiction of terms. In actuality, it would make less sense if I judged it without watching it. If you're an atheist, at least read the Bible, man. Jeez, what kind of logic is that this world has? But getting back to those pictures, instead these TNA supporters and staff and all these other people that they're talking so much shit defending it, just produce proof to the contrary. Undeniable proof to the contrary. Each time something comes up, not just for attendance numbers, but anytime any bad rumor starts, they could have just presented undeniable proof that it was just a rumor. With their TV deals, with their wrestling contracts, with any of their rumor problems, they could have at any given point just killed the rumor if they produced undeniable proof that any of these things weren't happening. And they never have. They never do.
Ultimately, yeah, they don't even have to do it like a statement thing. They could just like throw it up on their website and be like, hey, check out the footage from this last house show, and just have the picture of the arena.
Yeah.
Like as packed as it could be with some action shots. And
prove
and
us wrong. Good. Prove something wrong. Show the opposite side of this. Show the proof. TNA is ultimately just a bunch of people with a little bit of money trying desperately to hang out to a little bit of relevance and not even succeeding at that. You know, and at the end of the day, it does need to go, because having to watch people that I genuinely enjoy in the indies in TNA is slowly making me sour on them. And I don't want that to happen. And I feel like other wrestling fans feel the same way. There are fans of Davey Richards and Eddie Edwards and of Eric Young and of Abyss that are now rolling their eyes when they see them just because of the stigma that TNA brings with it.
I don't like Abyss right now because of the character change. I don't like his costume, his mask and everything, but you're totally right. It's just like, to see these guys in TNA, and I've already told you, I've given up watching TNA on a weekly basis unless we have to cover these pay-per-views. And I can't even say that it's sad because I don't miss it.
Yeah, there's not really much to miss, you know? But I mean, you see what I mean? These are the reasons why people knock TNA. It's not just people looking for ways. Maybe there are people out there that troll and that just pick fights with this company and for no reason. But I'm giving genuine reasons and problems that I have with the existence of TNA and the way that they run things. And this doesn't even, we didn't even address all the late pay and just the things that they do constantly, the false announcements. Ultimately, I just think it's too much, man. I'm very underwhelmed by it. And I don't feel bad. I think that it does need to go. I think it needs to die.
You know, it's funny, like this whole time we're talking about this, I'm actually looking at the pictures that I took at the event that I went to like 2-3 years ago, and the arena is pretty full.
Yeah, because 2 or 3 years ago, they still hadn't completely jumped the shark yet. I hung on. I'm someone who's watched every explosion. I've watched every single Impact. I haven't missed any of their shows. I've watched all of the one night onlys. I've seen all of the spin cycles on Explosion. I'm not just some casual person poking fun of this fucking company. We've been here the whole time. But I'm not going to pretend that it's good when it isn't. It's not good. It hasn't been good for a long time. And a lot of their business practices are reflecting on just the shitty booking that we're seeing here and vice versa. It's inarguable.
Like, what are you going to do about it, man? It's like they're not doing anything about it to improve it. So, like, honestly, what are you going to do about it as just a person sitting on the outside watching?
Yeah, there's really not much that you can do. I think that it's pretty much over at this point. It's funny because we're supposed to be reviewing Bound for Glory. So let's get back to that now that we've given our 2 cents on the card overall. But yeah, Pope and Josh Matthews seemed happy to be out of their prison. You know, they weren't just watching via satellite.
Like everyone else.
The first match was Zema Ion against Manic against Andrew Everett against Tigre Uno. And this goes into one of my issues with this kind of stuff. Why is Andrew Everett in here? There's nothing wrong with the guy, but for one of your biggest pay-per-views, you're going to have an Andrew Everett?
In a match with the rest of your stars, and it's just like, what is he contributing to this? You knew he wasn't going to win the match.
Yeah, but like I said, we have this big roster here. We have all of these guys. It looks really good. It comes off really good because they at least some of them are known, but then you just throw in a jobber. Like, imagine if in WWE they just had like a random jobber in there. Like, we were watching WrestleMania, and then all of a sudden CJ Parker came out.
I was about to go, who?
You see what I mean? Like, you just don't do it. It's not a matter of, yeah, they're all good talent. We're not saying anyone sucks, but there's a time and place for everything. And generally, in what's considered one of your biggest shows, you wouldn't have Andrew Everett because he's not an established part of your regular roster.
I mean, of everybody else they could have used, what was Crazy Steve doing?
Those people are probably long gone, ultimately.
It's funny because I was about to think of another person like an X Division star that they could have used in the match, and I really can't think of anybody else.
But if they wanted this pay-per-view to maintain some level of credibility, aside from just having some good wrestlers mixed in, which every indie place has that at this point, PWG has that if I want to watch that, Evolve has that, which I watch constantly, I don't need to come here for good wrestling, so they need more than that. So if you're going to pretend that this is a big show and the granddaddy of them all for TNA, you can't have Andrew Everett, because he's a new guy. And then we have Tigre Uno. And in the match, Tigre Uno separated his shoulder. I could have told you that because he had like a really bad bump in the middle of the match and it looked like he was hurt from that point on, but he still winds up going over. But I feel like they had to pay people to mark out to get the crowd shots of them because it looked so insincere. The people that were cheering, they looked like they were just plants in there.
I wouldn't put it past them though. It's probably like friends of whoever's family. Like they just came in and said, hey, just sit in the front and chair and, you know, make it look like you're having fun. And you can't blame them because it's like, look at the people you have in this Ultimate X match. It was, what, Ion, Manic, Everett, Tigre Uno. Don't we normally have more than four guys in this match?
I thought it was always four. Wasn't it four?
Was it four? I feel like one time I watched it was probably six. It could have been six,
but they've been known to do fours as well. There's nothing weird about that. But still, I just think that it was an all right match. The wrestling's good. Obviously, Zema Ion's not a slouch. Manic, TJ Perkins is really good. I've always liked him in Ring of Honor.
Yeah. They did a little sit down with him and they were talking to him about, not on the actual pay-per-view, but it's something that I actually came across. It was a very interesting, video to watch where, Matthews is talking to him about the first time he came to TNA and he talks about how a lot of people don't know unless they're like hardcore avid fans about how he joined when he came in, I think before 2004 as Puma. Then he left for a while, and then they called him back to come and do the whole suicide manic gimmick.
Yeah. I didn't know he was there before that.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. So, like, listening to that, and I was like, oh, he was... Like, I saw Puma wrestle there in the past. I guess I don't know why I didn't put 2 and 2. I know he's always been Puma. I just didn't think about it.
Yeah, neither did I. But, you know, like I said, it wasn't a bad match. At the end, we had Gregory Helms, who came out to give Tigre Uno props, and he was standing there facing him. And I just don't like, again, people were complaining about Gregory Helms being there. And this, again, goes back to the fact that it's not about Gregory Helms being there. It's how they present it and how they put the spin on it. Because he had to wear bright green. And he had to have the Pope point out that he's in his signature colors and stuff. And it's like, you're just trying. You may as well call him the Hurricane. Say it. You know you want to say it. You have him out here in bright green. You're saying it's his signature colors. You guys don't want to get sued, though. So you're just saying, oh, look, it's Gregory Helms. If you're not really trying to put that WWE spin on things, maybe people wouldn't be so critical of the Hurricane showing up there. And that's really my complaint about it.
I thought he had the rights to that name.
I don't know. Does he? I don't know for sure.
I know he's wrestled for other promotions under the name of the Hurricane. He's done color changes where he's worn like a red and black attire as opposed to the normal green and black.
That was probably in the deep indies. I've seen 1-2-3 Kid and Marty Jannetty wrestle as the throwbacks in the Juggalo thing, you know?
You've told me that, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, sometimes maybe in the deep indies it doesn't matter as much. I'm not sure how it works, but either way, he shows up there. If you either do the Hurricane thing or don't do it, don't be Gregory Helms because you are going to get that kind of a reaction. And I think people were justified. And yes, of course, he has the right to be there and the guy has the right to make money and get a paycheck. But at the same time, this goes back to TNA using people and not doing anything with them. He just came out for that. We won't see him again. Nothing will come of it. And it's just another pointless thing that's going on there.
Right. You know? Because something that always threw me off. That was something that I actually stuck into TNA for a while because I was going to give up months ago. There was pictures that actually surfaced of him holding the X Division title when they changed it to the green and gold one. And I was like, oh, it'd be cool to see him in TNA as their X Division champion. I always liked him in WWE. And like 3-4 months passed and there was nothing from it. So I just thought that, whatever deal went through, it went through, it didn't work out and he went his separate way.
Yeah, that's probably what happened. They probably lowballed him or something. But I think the problem isn't him being there. He has the right to be there. I don't blame him for being there. I blame them for how they use him. And that's what really makes it a tragedy.
I don't even think they lowballed him. I think it goes to the whole, the way the pay-per-view ended with the new champion. He's probably like, you make Matt Hardy champion and I'll come work for you guys. And at this point, I can put this out there because you guys have no talent. Or you have talent.
Yeah, but they can't afford him. It was an appearance. He didn't come to work for anyone. He came to appear once.
You think it's just the appearance and we won't see? Well, you won't see him because I'm not watching the weeklies.
I'm sure that that's the reason he's there. And if he does show up more than once, it'll be sparringly before he's gone. This is truly the end for them. Why are we going to have a Hurricane run now?
because they got to do it in true TNA fashion. You have him come, he builds up a storyline, he's there for 2 weeks, and then on the third week, he's just gone with no explanation as to what happened.
They should show some class and pack up and leave already.
Yeah.
So then EC3 comes out to shoot a promo, and he can barely get boos. One person goes, boo. The rest of the fans aren't reacting at all.
Because the rest of the fans don't even know whether he's a heel or a face because they don't regularly watch the program.
Yeah, and then we had that TNA Royal Rumble, which starts with Jesse and Mr. Anderson, and then Eli Drake comes in. I'm just going to run through it quick because I don't want to spend time on TNA much longer. Al Snow comes in with Head, another WWE thing, or ECW thing, if we go even further back to its roots.
Yeah, yeah.
So Al Snow with Head. And then the thug, Aiden O'Shea, comes out.
I'm not going to say who. Just keep it rolling.
Yeah, well, his name's Aiden O'Shea. But here's another thing. We have a Rumble now. We have another unknown guy, another indie guy that's coming out in the middle of your biggest pay-per-view. Shouldn't be an Aiden O'Shea in this. Out of all the people you have in the roster, that's what you bring us. So next is Robbie E, and then Aiden. Aiden also, I'm just going to complain a little bit about this. He sold Robbie E's kicks like shit. He's not a really good worker. He doesn't sell right. He doesn't have a business in the ring with these people. But there he is.
The guy's green as goose shit.
And then we have Mahabali She-Ra, who comes out next. And She-Ra, do you remember the She-Ra part?
What happened? I know there was like a clusterfuck at some point in the match.
Well, She-Ra, in the middle of the match, he does his little dance. He folds his arms together and he wiggles his fingers and he starts dancing. And then one of the people is about to punch him and he stops him and he's like, wait. And he does the dance, and that guy's like, oh, and he does the dance. Then someone else gets something about to punch him, and they're like, wait, and he does the dance. And then before you know it, everyone in this Rumble is in the middle of the ring with She-Ra's music playing, doing that little Indian dance that he does.
It's cool when you see shit like that in the indies, but it's only cool when you see shit like that in the indies when it's like, it's AJ Styles or it's a Chris Sabin, somebody who's established and like, you know, they're like a serious technician and they break character for a minute. I've seen Christian do it also in TNA. So it's cool, and it's like, oh, shit, like, look at that, ha, 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 ha. Like, with this, it's just no.
Yeah, it really is. And then after that, Tyrus comes out, and Pope calls Tyrus the Man Dinosaur. And this is, once again, can we not strategically reference WWE gimmicks every chance that we get, Pope? Like, now he's the Man Dinosaur Tyrus? Come on, man.
What happened to the unicorns of Swole? Like, he wears that on his fucking attire. Call him that.
And then we have Chris Melendez, one of the only people at this point whose music hit that I immediately knew who it was.
Of all people.
Before this, it was just jobber after jobber. And then he winds up giving Mr. Anderson a big boot with his fake leg.
Which I thought
that was kind of funny, too. You whip someone to the ropes and you lift the fake leg and give him the big boot. Whatever.
You figure he couldn't...
Well, I guess he can lift the other leg, logically.
Yeah, he can't lift the other one.
But
yeah.
It still seems weird to even kick someone with the fake leg.
But you got to factor in, it's a metal leg, so it'll do more damage.
Yeah, I don't have to factor that in. They're going to break that shit on someone's head. And then Brodus winds up eliminating Al Snow, immediately followed by Melendez, and then followed by Mahabali She-Ra. Three in a row, literally, within a span of 5 seconds, which doesn't make any sense to me.
For the big pop that's coming up next.
Yeah, and then in comes Tommy Dreamer. Tommy Dreamer does his running, and they couldn't pay for his proper music. You know, of course they didn't want to do it, so they had an imitation of it. And he's wearing polka dot pants, and he does the Dusty Rhodes elbow and gets
a
pop.
Yeah, a lot of dusty spots, yeah.
Yeah, which looked really good. Abyss comes in also afterwards. Pope winds up pulling a Michael Cole, and he comes into the match as a commentator. Like, his music hits the dan, 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 and he takes off his stuff and he climbs in, and Tyrus and Abyss both turn and stare him down. So he looks scared.
Jumps out like a bitch.
Yeah, he just climbs over the ropes like, whoa, and he gets out of there.
Is he legit not cleared to wrestle? Because
I don't know.
I always liked him when he was on ECW, even though I know like CM Punk didn't like him.
But you see how much WWE stuff has happened already? We have all these WWE references. Then they did the commentators coming into the Royal Rumble spot that WWE loves to do. Like, the whole thing just reeks of WWE, but just not in a good way.
Yeah.
And then Robbie E gets eliminated by Jesse. Jesse sort of leg scissors him over the ropes when they're struggling. And
I don't care about those two anymore. Like, their storyline should have been done. Like, they broke up the bromance and then they had their fight to see who was the better one. Robbie E kept getting the upper hand. Like, he beat him 3 times in a row in one match, which I thought was funny. And like, they should have just ended that and let them both like go on and do their separate thing.
Yeah, they should have done something like that. And then Anderson gets a mic check on Dreamer and throws him out, followed by mic checking Jesse and throwing him out. And Tyrus goes over Anderson.
Yeah.
Tyrus winds up going over Anderson when it comes down to the two of them. And then Tyrus announces that he's coming for the heavyweight championship. No, he says he's coming for the heavyweight world championship of the world. Never heard of that one. Is that another? Is that like the King of the Mountain? Like another TNA title?
It's a new title that they're going to introduce at a future date, but you won't see it because it won't be on TV.
Yeah, but again, too many unknown people in this, or just jobber people in general. And I don't know. I just didn't really like it that much. It wasn't that good of a rumble. It wasn't the worst. I've seen worse episodes of Impact, but there was nothing Bound for Glory or granddaddy of them all about this entire thing. Next was the tag team thing, which was Trevor Lee and Brian Myers against the Wolves, their rematch clause since they won during the invasion.
But wait, but we had the segment after that when Hemi goes to interview Tyrus, but then EC3 comes out.
Okay, well, go ahead. You run that down.
I mean, this is a short thing where pretty much EC3 comes out and he says they're coming for the tag team titles. Well, pretty much what you said. You just missed that first part.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So then basically what happens is, I'm not going to run the whole match, but the Wolves went over.
It's your basic Wolves match.
It's a basic Wolves match that we get every week. That's good. And Wolves,
it's like
they went over with Chasing the Dragon. I thought that was interesting. Wasn't that Chasing the Dragon? You kick somebody and brainbuster?
Yeah, yeah. They did that the last time I watched, about 2 weeks ago. They hit that as like a regular move too.
It's interesting to think that Chasing the Dragon, it's Red Dragon's finisher, and the history, if anyone's familiar with Ring of Honor history, Kyle O'Reilly was a protege of Davey Richards, and Bobby Fish was his tag team partner in Japan. And that's what made the two of them come together and turn on Davey Richards and form Red Dragon. At the time, Davey Richards and Kyle O'Reilly were Team Ambition, where Davey Richards was sort of like the Batman to Kyle O'Reilly's Robin. And he was always trying to make Kyle O'Reilly keep a cool head and not be a hothead and be, you know, we're all about ambition and shit. And then eventually Kyle O'Reilly got tired of his bullshit and probably a lame name like Team Ambition. So he winds up turning on Davey Richards and he seeks out his former partner, Bobby Fish.
I like the name Team Ambition. It sounds very early 2000-ish.
I do not like that name. I was very upset. I was pissed off because, first of all, I thought Future Shock had a long way to go. I really like Kyle O'Reilly and Adam Cole together. I thought that was a really cool team. So it's kind of like, I like the idea of them being the young version of Davey Richards and Eddie Edwards. And that's what they were going for when they first brought those guys in. Where it's like Eddie Edwards and Davey Richards were like the older guys that were guiding Kyle O'Reilly and Adam Cole. And then they split that up and they put each one of them with the other. Like it became Adam Cole and Eddie Edwards and Kyle O'Reilly and Davey Richards. And that's when that whole thing sort of went sour on me. But not to segue too much, but ultimately, I just like the fact that...
Look, you sound so like happy talking about that as opposed to this event.
Yeah, because it's Ring of Honor. It's not shitty TNA. But anyway, not to segue too far, I just thought it was funny how now it comes full circle where like the Wolves are using Red Dragon's finisher, the Chasing the Dragon, to retain the titles in a TNA pay-per-view.
Yeah, so it's like when you watch Ring of Honor later on in the week and you see them actually hit that move, you could be like, hey, the show that came on before, those guys did it. Maybe they got it from them. And I know what they're doing.
You don't want to give them any credit, huh?
No. I like the team, but no.
That's right after I said I didn't want to spend too much time on the tag team match. I just gave the backstory of all of the people involved and stuff. All right, so another thing, Pope, just a side note here. I don't like Pope calling suplexes souffles. What is the point of that? Is there some sort of humor to that we're missing? Because I don't think so. I think that he's just not that funny. Don't do it anymore.
It's like, was it Booker T on commentary? No, it wasn't Booker T. Somebody was on commentary and they were just saying like a whole bunch of random like stuff that R-Truth. It's like R-Truth on commentary. That's who he reminds me of. But R-Truth was entertaining.
He reminds me of a bad Kofi Kingston since he sort of sounds like him.
You think? I don't hear it.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Rude goes over Lashley with the Rude bomb. We're not going to spend too much time on that match. It was a decent match. You know, there was nothing to see.
You knew how it was going to end. They weren't going to take the title off of Bobby Roode.
Right, right. And then we go to Billy Corgan showing Earl Hebner's video package. That's probably a sentence I never thought that I would say in my life. Even saying it, I thought that I was saying the wrong thing for a minute because it was like, it doesn't sound like those words go together.
You sound like you were reading off a script and you didn't like understand the words that you were reading.
Yeah, because it just, you know, when I don't feel like saying Billy Corgan when I'm talking about TNA. I almost thought I was making a mistake. Instinctively, my tongue stopped itself. It's like, I have to get used to it. Billy Corgan came out.
You don't have to get used to it. We're not going to be reporting this stuff much longer.
Yeah, that's true. Why am I getting used to something that's on its way out? But yeah, Billy Corgan comes out to show the Earl Hebner video package, and he has Earl Hebner come into the ring and gives him props. And it's funny because I have nothing against Earl, man, but don't you find that video package funny? Just the way he looks, like hanging over the ropes, and the way they're talking about Earl fucking Hebner.
For the TNA Hall of Fame.
Yeah, it's just like, get the induction while you can, Earl.
It's going to be nothing by the end of the year, but yeah, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And the next match was Gail Kim against Awesome Kong. And so I just wanted to ask you something. Do you notice this awkward top-down camera that they've been using where you can see Gail Kim come running in? Do you see, you know what I'm talking about?
I figured it was usual. It's your classic TNA fuck up. I didn't think too much about it.
But they did it a few times for other people too. Like when EC3 came out and the light's supposed to come on and he's standing there, you know, with his back turned and stuff. They showed a top down camera of him where you see him run really fast and get into that position. And it was like, why did you do that for both Gail Kim and EC3? Like we probably shouldn't see that part. Like if you're trying to be cool by showing that bird's eye view camera, it almost looked like a night vision camera. You shouldn't show us that part. There's nothing cool about that.
I think it was just classic TNA screw up right there.
I don't think it was classic TNA screw up.
Like they cut to the wrong camera.
Maybe. Who knows? Who really knows? And see, these are other problems that this company's having, though. There were other technical difficulties that we're going to get to, but that's just an example of just weirdness. If it wasn't technical difficulties, it was weird. And as far as the Gail Kim Awesome Kong match goes, what was your overall opinion on it? Because I know you were a big Gail Kim mark, and you always liked their feud back in the past.
I'm an Awesome Kong fan also. It was like their basic match, just like to me it seemed slower paced than the stuff I used to see them. I guess, well, it's expected because they are older.
It didn't have that legendary feel that their feud used to have, though.
Right, and to me, I don't know if it's because I haven't been watching the weekly product. I don't even know why these two are even facing each other.
Yeah,
but it was a decent match. I'm not gonna like shit on their match. If I booked it, Kong would have went over.
Yeah, well, I guess. I don't really know. It depends on if she's going to be signed. I guess at this point, contracts don't matter either.
I know why they gave Gail the victory. Like, her husband was in the crowd.
Yeah, that was the one thing that I like, was the fact that Robert Irvine grabs the chair from Kong, and Earl and him argue over the chair, and he's like, that's my wife. And then inadvertently, Gail winds up taking the implant buster onto a pile of chairs.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do like the fact that she retained. And on the way out, she held up Hebner's hand like she was still paying honor to him and stuff instead of the other one. You see her quickly tell him, you know, I'm going to hold up your hand. And then she holds up his hand sort of to honor him and stuff. Mm. And while this is going on, Pope and Josh Matthews don't seem to get along. At one point, Pope accuses Matthews of putting him on the spot over and over again. And then Pope asks Matthews if he's ever had any of Robert Irvine's food. And he says no. So then Pope says that's because he only serves A-listers like me. And then Matthews is just shocked. And he asks Pope, he's like, did something happen between us before this match? And then it becomes really awkward and silent with them and stuff. And they sort of try to get back on the same track, but it just felt weird. The whole thing was uncomfortable.
Their commentary's always been like that. I don't know if you're just noticing it for the first time, but when I was still watching the weeklies, there are points where like they would have a little fallout and then it'd be awkward silence in between the match. And then Josh Matthews would just randomly chime in and be like, he wouldn't say like, well, I guess I'm going to have to call a match by myself. But the whole tone of his voice would be like, well, Pope's not going to talk. So I guess I'm going to have to break the silence.
You see what I mean? It's just weird. This is an uncomfortable thing to watch. Bad enough that they're watching the same tapes that we're watching of TNA essentially. They're not even there except for this pay-per-view.
It's almost over. We only got two more left.
Yeah, that's what you think, man. You keep praying. Why do you keep thinking?
No, two more matches. I mean.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant like two more impacts.
Oh, wow.
Oh, man. Yeah, so we had Kurt Angle against Eric Young, and Kurt comes out with Dixie's no DQ announcement where he basically says, this is going to be a fight. We're going to have no DQ and all this other bullshit. Then Eric Young winds up kicking Kurt's ass. He pile drives him and Kurt's neck is all fucked up and the doctors have to come out to tend to Kurt. Eric Young is beating up officials to get to Kurt while they're trying to take him out. And then Kurt's begging Eric Young, saying, Kurt, Eric, it's off. It's off. No, Eric, it's off. Like, is this how you make Kurt Angle look strong? You have Captain America fucking begging Red Skull not to kick his ass? You know? Like, who does that?
TNA booking, and then Angle ends up fucking going over. But you knew that's how it was going to be. That's basic wrestling for you.
It's just
the heel
weird
comes
that
out, he powers out throughout the whole match, and
right?
Then the
but
hero
the but
back.
The babyface doesn't normally go, dude, please stop or anything like that. You know, like, can you imagine if that happened to John Cena? Like, he was fighting Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens got the upper hand and hurt Cena, and then you hear Cena like, "Stop it, Owens. Chill out, man. Please, please." It would be like, wow, that's just crazy. Like, come on, it's Kurt fucking Angle. You're going to really have him begging like that? Like, it was just stupid. And the most entertaining thing to me about the match was the Captain America guy in the audience with the shield. And the crowd's going, use the shield, use the shield, use the shield. But they wouldn't use the shield.
Which is, it's bad because when they go to the house shows, they do it. So it's just like, I don't know.
Use it.
Yeah. It would have been cool if he took it and like threw it at his chest and Young like fell back or something. And then he ran back and gave it to the guy, or even like broke the shield over his head. Anything.
They're like, man, we're waiting for two more paychecks besides this one. We're not using the shield.
It's probably that too. It's like, shit, I can't afford to use this shield. What if I break it? Then we got to pay the guy back after the show.
And what money will we do that with? We spent all of it on this catering that everybody ate but us.
The jabrons came and ate the food.
The jabrons ate our food. Is that what TNA fans are going to be from now on? We're going to just call them jabrons?
But that's what Russo called them.
That's what Russo called them. You know what I'm going to do from now on? The next time a TNA fan steps up to defend the product, I'm going to ask them, I'm going to say, I only have one question for you about this product. How's their catering?
Like, oh, it's pretty nice.
I know you TNA marks be going there and getting in, right? You go to that buffet. I saw you back there with Bobby Roode.
Oh, shit.
Long story short, the majority of the match is Eric Young working the back of Angle's head. Ultimately, like you said, Angle gets the babyface comeback and he taps to the ankle lock.
Yeah.
And that goes to a dramatic Drew McIntyre video package, which gets interrupted by their audio and video simultaneously falling apart.
This isn't the first time we've had this issue at a TNA event, though, and like not at a house show. This always happens at their pay-per-views.
And you see what I mean? This is another reason why I find it funny, because that video package was showing just the whole dramatic main event. It's the build up to the main event. Those are supposed to get you pumped that you're about to watch this main event. This is the story of why these people are all here and blah, blah, blah. Imagine if that happened at WrestleMania. They're going to show once in a lifetime Cena versus Rock. I hear voices in my head. Sorry about that, folks. Something's wrong here. Fuck it. We're just going to go straight to ringside.
Just replay it. It just ruins the whole moment.
It does, but then don't fuck it up. You see what I mean? This is another thing where we're not just nitpicking. There's shit wrong here. This is Bound for Glory, not an Impact. And even on an Impact level, because on a Raw level, that will be inexcusable. Even on an Impact level, the video failing is inexcusable. I'm watching Bound for Glory. Okay, I don't want to see that the video failed. And oh, you're not going to get that video package that's supposed to pump you up. Some of us, like you and I, value those video packages. We value the whole product. We like seeing what they invested the most time into. And we've given props before in here. We've been like, you know, before that main event, that really got me into it. You've said that yourself a few times when you were watching a match that you weren't really invested in. And then you've told me afterwards, you know, I wasn't invested in the match, but then that video package came on and it really got me into the mood.
It was just like, I didn't realize all these awesome moments happened that led up to this. It was like, now I'm pumped.
And then this time that set the tone for the rest of the pay-per-view because it's been done properly. That last WrestleMania, the one that had, who did it have in it again? Some rapper, LL Cool J. LL Cool J came on that last one.
At the start.
And
he talked about
how we're all connected through all of these moments and stuff and pressed the start button and everything. It was awesome. It really made you feel like something special was going on here. So even though it's like no big deal, it's just a video package, presentation is everything, especially in a business that's all about presentation. So when you see something for the main event of your biggest pay-per-view that's going to basically sell it to the people watching it, why they invested, and it fucking falls apart, you're going to have negative feelings about this.
Dude, the video packages make a big fucking deal. I remember they used to have that in the old WWE games also, where when you got to Mania, if you were in the championship main event, they would ask you what type of video package you wanted to have. And I always thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, all of those things are awesome. So we're going to definitely feel cheated if it doesn't work out. That was barely mentioned by anyone that package fell apart.
Oh, man.
I'm just taking jab left to right here. But you know I'm right, dude. You know I'm totally right. It's inexcusable for these kind of things to happen.
In your main event. Like, I'm not even going to say it's okay for it to happen at, like, the opening of the show. Or, like, if we had that that Ultimate X match and it happened there because there was no build-up hype to that anyway. But say there was like a build-up hype video package for that and it failed at the beginning of the pay-per-view and then you had all these awesome matches, so now it's forgivable. Now you're at the main event and the main event video plays fine and it's just like, ah, they had that one hiccup. It's okay, but this is your main event here and you just fucked up the video package for that.
And then just said, fuck it, let's go to ringside. No, it doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. So you know what? Just to honor the way that they cut us out of that video package and said, fuck it, let's go to ringside. Fuck it, let's go to the finish. EC3 goes over. No, he doesn't.
No, he didn't.
Matt Hardy goes over.
Matt Hardy actually wins. And you know what?
But we're still fast forwarding to the end of it. EC3 goes backstage. And then my favorite part of the pay-per-view happens. He pushes John Gaborik's roly-poly ass over a table. You see the guy go, ooh. he Humpty Dumpty's over the table.
So like it was cool because to me it was unexpected. I didn't think Matt Hardy was gonna win. I didn't even take into account that they were in his hometown because I still didn't think he was gonna win. But it's like now
even
you have,
when you saw that video package of him with his daughter and his son dressed in the Matt Hardy and Rebby there holding him, yeah, I knew they were gonna give him that moment.
I guess I didn't give him enough credit, but it was just like I saw it and. I don't know. I just didn't, in my head, it was like, this is EC3. We've seen this guy beat Kurt Angle. We've seen him beat Sting. Like he was their quote unquote. Well, they never called him that, but he was their version of Randy Orton. He was their legend killer. He took out these guys from, like he took out the Kurt Angle. He took out the Sting. He's taken out Bobby Roode and he's taken out Jeff Hardy. He's taken out all these former champions and in comes Matt Hardy and Matt Hardy beats you after you've been undefeated for like a year and a half.
I'm
nothing
against
Matt Hardy's wrestling, but
yeah, I see where you're coming from the hierarchy of wrestling standpoint. I have nothing against Matt. He does deserve it amongst when I look at all the other former champions he has. He deserves it more than a lot of them anyway, though. Mm-hmm. And I have always liked Matt Hardy. I think he's a really good wrestler.
Huge fan. I remember casually met him at like a McDonald's one time and he's a really cool guy.
I think the Hardys, all those kind of guys are very cool people. I'm by no means shitting on the people that work there. I'm shitting on the company for making the people that work there look stupid.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it just doesn't really make any sense to just conduct yourself that way and just have like a shitty presentation. They deserve better. You know, you want things to go better than they're allowing it to go. It's really unfortunate, man. It really is. There's supposed to be some level of pride and dignity when you carry yourself in this business. They're simply lacking from TNA.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, the coolest part of it all was, like, I see he was taking pictures with his kid with the title and everything. I thought that was pretty cool.
I know,
like, I saw that earlier today.
You know, I know some people get pissed off when I say this, but I watch WWE. I watch New Japan. I know what goes into a real wrestling product. I don't feel bad. I don't feel bad. I'm sorry.
This is our show. We say what we want.
Exactly.
We don't like
we say
it.
Whatever the fuck we want
bad.
On here. Exactly. That's why we have this, to talk about shitty wrestling as well as good wrestling. So let's get off of the TNA stuff. I think we gave them more coverage than we've ever really given them. All right. So now I guess we could jump around to whatever we want, huh? There's all kinds of shit to talk about here.
Everything's it's uphill from here.
Yeah. Well, we'll just cover some dirt sheets before we get into Madison Square Garden. In other news, John Cena's gone. John Cena's gone. You can't see him. He's taking time off. You can't see me. My time is off. But he'll be taking time off for a few months due to personal reasons. He's going to be missing the European tour. I'm not sure if he's missing Hell in a Cell or not. They weren't clear about that. I keep hearing yes, then yes, then no. But he might miss Survivor Series. There's a few things he's going to miss. Apparently, he's asked for this time off back in August, though, and he's expected to miss about 6 weeks.
I can deal with it. I mean, obviously they're going to have to take the belt off of him.
Mm-hmm. They sure will. I wonder who they're going to give it to.
It's funny because one of the sources that I checked, I don't know why they felt the need to point out that he is not taking the time off to marry Nikki Bella.
Really good clickbait.
No, it was like, it wasn't even on like the clay. It was just like when you were reading the actual, when I was reading the actual news, like that was just in there. And I was like,
maybe a rumor started. You know how these rumors run rampant.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, did I miss a rumor prior to this? Cause it was just like,
Yeah. I posted this on the Talk Brunch Facebook, but I sort of felt that gobbledygooker thing was a little weird that they did there. Did you see that?
I don't believe I did. What gobbledygooker thing?
WWE themselves posted a video. You know the clip of the gobbledygooker?
Oh, that thing, when he
hatches out of the egg and stuff, except that they graphically impulsed it, so as soon as he cracks out of the egg, it's seen and you hit
Because they're copying off all the stuff that pops up on our Facebook like every week.
Like the Power Ranger one.
The Power Ranger
one is the best one.
Meet the new White Ranger. It's John Cena.
Zach was feeling it. Oh, man.
Want to chat with the guys? Then be sure to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and subscribe to us on YouTube. TalkBrunch.com.
Served hot.
In other news, Mick Foley chimed in on what he felt as far as a possible Cena versus Ziggler feud, and he feels that it's money. He says that properly executed, a Dolph Ziggler-John Cena feud could be huge. The moment that he saw the teaser on Total Divas finale, where Dolph, the very real-life former boyfriend of Nikki Bella, is telling his former flame that he could be a husband and a father, he literally yelled, "That's the angle. This is what Ziggler needs."
Did you see that yet, by the way? I know you were a couple of episodes behind.
No, I know about it, but I'm still a few episodes behind.
Like, yeah, after he tells
the trailer gave it away, though, anyway.
Huh?
The trailer gave most of it away, though, anyway.
Yeah, yeah, but no, there was, like, one more thing that they didn't... Like, this is how they ended the episode. For those of you that didn't see it, spoiler alert. Pretty much he tells her all of that. He was... Because apparently when they were dating, she told him she wanted to settle down and have a family. And he didn't want any of that. He's young playboy Dolph Ziggler. Now he's telling her, he was like, "Yo, I'm older. And a lot of the things that we talked about," he was like, I want that stuff now. Like, I'm not going to be wrestling forever. Like, I want to settle down. I want to have a family. He was like, "I can give you that. You know, John Cena doesn't want any of that." And she's like, "Stop, stop, stop." And then he leans in to kiss her. And then that's where the episode ends.
Yeah, them and their bullshit. That's more work than WWE Raw at this point. But yeah, so Foley says that that's the angle and that there's no doubt in his mind that a vicious Ziggler with Nikki Bella by his side could be the man in WWE.
You got to factor in, how would that work into a storyline right now, though, if they're still playing it up that he's with Lana?
That Lana shit has to go. You know how that would play it out. Let's just pretend it didn't happen. Let's do like the end of Mario Brothers 2 and just have him wake up in bed like, "Oof, the fuck? Birdo, who's that? I didn't know Birdo.
It was all a dream." Yeah,
Birdo, man. Luigi, man, Ziggler, that pasta you
Ziggler
made last
would have
night.
To go heel. Like, Lana would have to be cleared to wrestle, and Ziggler would have to go heel for that to work. That's the only way.
Exactly.
In my booking world, that's how it would be. Lana comes back, she's cleared to wrestle, so that way she still stays relevant after she splits with Ziggler, and then Ziggler just turns on her and turns out to be an asshole anyway, which they were showing hints at anyway when he was giving Summer Rae gifts.
Yeah, and Nikki also made a statement about it where she said, "All of us females have probably had experiences a few times in our lives where the ex has come out of the woodwork. It's definitely messy because of someone I dated for a long time who says he wants to give me marriage and babies and he knows that's what I've always wanted. Things get very tricky and crazy, so it's definitely a reason to tune in." You see how she added that "definitely a reason to tune in" on one of the most important decisions of her life?
Because it's all scripted, yeah.
A little too scripted to this point. And Lana tweeted about the entire thing, and she said, "Did I just hear correctly that on Raw they just showed a scene from Total Divas that Ziggler still has feelings for Nikki?" And Nikki tweets and says, "What can I say? Blondes may be more fun, but brunettes aren't replaceable." And then she says, "Hashtag once you go Bella, you never go back." And then Lana tweets, "Maybe Ziggler should go be with Nikki. Oh, wait, she picked John Cena. Hashtag Total Divas, hashtag Raw." So yeah, more work tweets here.
Yeah.
See, everything's work. She's very, everything's a work.
Well, I've mentioned this before too on the episode. She's very heavy into playing the kayfabe role. Like when they showed her after she did the surgery and she was at home cheering on Dolph Ziggler with the cast on her hand and everything. Yeah. When that's when he was wearing the tights with her face on the crotch.
Yeah, the dick face tights. That's what they're called on the WWE Chop Zone. No, they're not. All right, so in other news, we have Alex Riley, who's going back to the Performance Center because he tweeted, "This Tuesday, I will finally return home to the sacred grounds of the WWE Performance Center for the first time in over 4 months." And for most people, I would normally say congratulations, but for A-Rod, I'll say womp womp because
I wouldn't even say congratulations because it's like every time you see him, it's a further backstep. It's like you went from being on the active roster to being on NXT, to being a commentator to on NXT, to coming back, to getting injured, to just being pushed back to the Performance Center. You know what your next step is, Riley?
Uh-oh.
TNA.
Yep, I was about to say he's one of the people to run it into the next TNA Rumble.
Like, we joke about it, but I see it happening in the foreseeable future. Like, the next thing is, like, it's the old WWE curse. When I always call it the curse. When the game comes out, somebody always gets fired. At least, like, three people get fired. So expect two people off the actual main roster to go, and don't be surprised if you see Alex Riley released also. You had a cool theme, man. I liked your theme song.
Yeah, it sounded like someone cool was coming out.
Yeah. Then he would come out with what? He used to have the sleeveless varsity jacket.
Yeah, and he used to come out bouncing. Boing, yeah. Boing. Yeah, well, well. Finn Balor and the rest of the NXT roster were in Nashville, Tennessee on Friday for a house show. And Balor decided to take that opportunity to visit TNA headquarters and pose in front of it and do the DX crotch chop.
I saw that.
Yeah. And I think that's Jason Jordan off to the side, just sitting there watching him do the crotch chop.
I didn't even notice anybody else was on the side. I got to go back and look at that picture.
Yeah, someone's sitting at a table. I could be wrong, but I feel like that's Jason Jordan just sitting there to the right of him. And then TNA's Grotto responded back by posing in front of a WWE office with a mean face with the Instagram photo reading, "The war is on." And my take on it is this. If WWE has Fergal Devitt and you answer with fucking Grotto, it's going to be a short war.
I mean, I saw you actually say this earlier. Okay, who else would you have taken off the TNA roster to fire back?
To fire back? I would have taken anyone. Davey Richards.
He's a tag team guy.
So what? He's also...
They got to take a singles... If you had to take a singles wrestler off the roster, who would you take? No one.
I would have to take Bobby Roode, even though it still is a bad comparison. I would take Bobby Roode, I guess.
Okay.
I'll take Tigre Uno.
But you got to factor it in. I don't know if you have this much news on it. They're apparently friends.
Yeah, because the final photo that they showed was the two of them in front of UFC.
Yeah. Balor wearing a Finn shirt.
Yeah, so they're just screwing around. And it's not like WWE cares that Balor was picking a jab at TNA. They don't know what that is.
But did you hear that CM Punk commented on that also?
What did he say?
He pretty much said, I think it was a fan that actually posted first on the 2nd of October, and it was like, "Let's go, Balor." And then Punk replies, and he goes, he was like, "My money is on Greedo, even if he didn't shoot first."
Oh, brother.
And that's how they ended up. That the picture that you saw that surfaced with Greedo and Finn, that was their reply to Punk. Because the caption below that is pretty much Balor replies to Punk, and it was just like, "Coming soon at CM Punk."
Punk actually recently mentioned that he says that the Susan G. Coleman thing is a scam. Did you hear about that?
I did not. Wow. Yeah, and they just promoted that shit tonight on Raw.
Yeah, well, he just talked about it tonight. Yeah, Punk said that the Susan G. Coleman thing is a scam, and that if you're going to give, this is the tweet, he said, "If you're going to give money to a company that claims to raise money for finding a cure for cancer, please do some research. Coleman is a scam. The truth is never popular."
I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, he says, "The truth is never popular. Fuck all you crazy asses. Read a book." Yeah. But Punk apparently has bigger concerns than fighting breast cancer, though it would seem, because...
I heard he got injured.
Yeah, he tweaked his shoulder while training in MMA, according to his coach, Duke Rufus. In the statement to ESPN, Rufus says he got caught up in a scramble, so right now he's taking a little time off. He was doing great before that. His progress has been good. He's got a great attitude, and he's a hard worker. Our biggest thing is we want him to be 101%. We don't have a hard date for his fight to force the issue. So making sure that he's completely healthy as possible. He's about at 50%. But that being said, remember that my 100% is a very well-prepared person. The UFC will probably book him in a fight 3 to 4 months in advance to a guy of his magnitude. We're probably looking at a fight in the next 6 to 10 months. So Punk's going to see a doctor on October 14th, and it is possible that they'll clear him to return. So it's nothing super major.
Yeah. It's not like he got injured like doing that, and it was like, "Oh, you're done now."
Yeah, but since you brought Punk up, I figured, yeah, let's get into a little bit of CM Punk. We don't get into him very often.
Yeah. He's been quiet as of late. Like, the last time we heard was when he was taking jabs at Hogan before the whole racist thing popped up.
In other news, Jeff Hardy has a new album.
So we got some Carlito news here, too.
The band is called Parox Y with a question mark, Space Gen.
Parox, that's the group that does his TNA music.
Yeah, Parox Y Gen. The album is Within the Cygnus Rift. The amount of weed you have to smoke for any of that to make sense is unknown.
I've listened to the music from that band before. Yeah. Like, this is where you would have to get the sound bite of the critic going, it stinks.
Aww, you don't like...
You know, that's one of the better songs. Like I said, I've listened to the whole album. The rest of the songs don't sound like that.
No?
Like, yeah, it sounds like, not to shit on anybody, but like he's definitely not using the microphones that we use to do the podcast. It sounds like he's using a very crappy microphone and he's recording in a garage.
Oh, it's like, boy.
Like the music's playing, but there's like a lot of echo and everything in there. It sounds bad. And I'm a huge Jeff Hardy fan. I was a mark for Jeff Hardy back when I was a little kid playing like WWF Attitude. I was making my character when that's when they first had created character. Well, Warzone had it first, but in Attitude, that's when they introduced the Hardy Boys. And my character was a Hardy Boy, pretty much. But so he's like hardcore mark. Like I said, one of the reasons I started watching TNA was because I found out Jeff Hardy was over there. But the dude, his music sucks. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm just harsh. I don't like Chris Jericho's music either.
I've never really listened to any Fozzy.
I'm not a Fozzy fan. So for all you that are just sitting there and you're like, oh, these guys are taking more jabs at Jeff because he's in TNA. It's like, no. Maybe it's me being biased where it's like, I don't like my wrestlers doing other things. Like I didn't like Rock in any of the Fast movies. Ballers is literally the only thing I like him in. It's
yeah,
like,
Ballers
I don't
is
like,
awesome.
Yeah,
told
I don't
you we're
like Jericho and Fozzy. I don't like Jeff Hardy with his peroxide, whatever band.
Peroxide. Oh, that is awesome. Well, hey, your wife says the peroxide is good for everything, right? Right?
You saw that?
Yeah.
Which was, I don't know why she posted that because I was the one that told her that.
That was a useful tip though. You know, I like her tips.
No, all the stuff that she posted, like I actually... nobody cares, but I use peroxide for most of that stuff anyway. Like I use peroxide as mouthwash and whatnot.
Wow, that's crazy. I don't know if I'd be able to do that.
Like I use it and then I use actual mouthwash after.
That makes sense, I guess.
Yeah.
So moving along, we have Paige talking about her pipe bomb that she had recently. And she said that she felt like the whole Divas Revolution thing started to get stale, which it did.
She
thought that it definitely needed a kick in the ass a little bit. And that Vince and the writers were cool with the promo. And they definitely gave her the freedom to say what she wanted. And she kept it as tame as possible. She wanted to go a little bit harder, but she thought, nah, I'll save it. And it was definitely an adrenaline rush. She wanted to be the bad guy. And she's happy to be the bad guy. She doesn't mind being hated. But the crowd was so receptive to it and great. They were cheering for most of it. And she was thinking, no, that's not the way it's supposed to be.
You guys are supposed to hate me.
But she was very nervous before doing it. She wanted to get out there and kick some butt and light a fire under the Divas Revolution again. And she feels that a pipe bomb or page bomb, as she calls it, is what was needed. And now that the team has split up and everyone is going for everyone, which is great. And she's looking forward to seeing where everyone else goes.
You know what doesn't work with that?
What's that?
The fact that they're still putting them together in tag matches.
I kind of like that they're still putting them together, but they're not really together. I think they should stay the PCB, but have that inner conflict. Let's not always have to do the extreme breakup, especially if we're going to start them feuding so soon.
Like, I mean, it worked tonight.
They've barely
like
been
the
together
match
a few
ended,
months.
Where she was trying to like take control of the whole match, and when she finally went for the tag, they just jumped off the apron and left her. That worked.
Yeah, that was last week, right?
No, that was tonight. Wasn't that tonight?
No, didn't tonight she have a one-on-one match against Natty and get tapped out?
Am I thinking of the Madison Square Garden match?
Yeah, you're thinking of the Garden. That's what it is.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Tonight she got tapped out in the whole
right,
match.
Right. Yeah. She lost cleanly to Natty. You're right.
Yeah, and then she said that the reason why she felt that the Divas division needed a spark is because it was cool with the first couple of nights with the NXT girls coming up, and it was something new and fresh, and then they kind of went back to the stale state of having tag matches and they weren't really telling a story. And she was wondering where this is going with the whole Charlotte and Nikki story was similar to her and Nikki, and people were complaining about that. So I'm glad that she took some initiative to try to do something to fix it, because the Divas Revolution isn't working out as well as it is in NXT.
Yeah, the storyline wasn't going anywhere at this point. It was like Charlotte got the belt, now what?
Yeah, and apparently pipe bombs aren't the only thing that Paige has been dropping lately.
Those lovely, lovely F-bombs?
Yeah, because she dropped an F-bomb here that I'm going to run the audio off.
I feel like Nye is a big selfie person. I wouldn't say I was queen of it. Definitely Nye. Definitely Nye. Hey, fuck you right back. Someone said it. I'm going to say it back. Can we believe that? Scotty Armstrong. I can't say it?
No, you cannot say that.
All right, sorry.
You can't say fuck, Paige. Kids.
Yeah.
No F-bombs.
Yeah, tell them that. Tell them that.
Hey, them. No F-bombs.
Yeah, thank you.
Hey, them. No F-bombs. Yeah, but what was happening there was she was doing an online Q&A broadcast, and another girl called her a bitch without realizing that she was doing the live broadcast. So then she wound up doing that.
Gotta love Paige.
Yeah, man. I definitely like her. She's a free spirit. It's exactly what we need in this dull-ass company right now. Yeah, well, while we're talking about divas and NXT, Eva Marie is doing better than ever, right?
No.
No? You sure?
Positive.
She's not like Dixie's announcement? Awesome.
go ahead, let's talk about this.
So she hurt Carmella this past Saturday at an NXT house show in Nashville, Tennessee. She hit her with a knee, followed by a bump that she took on her on the back of her head. And then afterward, Eva Marie pinned her, and the ref threw up the X, and Dr. Chris Saman showed up, and you know shit is serious when that guy shows up. He only shows up if you've had a heart attack or
a staph infection.
Or a staph infection, yeah. And sometimes maybe allegedly shows up if there's a staph infection. And Carmella was crying as she was leaving, and the fans were chanting, please retire, to Eva Marie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, this girl's a nightmare, right? I would almost think that they're purposely making her this bad if it wasn't for how dangerous it is.
Nah.
Yeah, it's just she's a mess. And remember, we said we were going to watch her very carefully. Apparently, we don't have to watch her very carefully, because I thought we were going to be watching her for little intricacies and her moves or subtle errors or mistimings. Nope, she's blatantly shitty.
She's
you could watch her while tweeting, while texting, while playing Clash of Clans, and you're not going to miss how fucking shitty she is.
It's funny you say that, because I remember the first time she came out, I was playing Clash of Clans, and I was like, oh, it's the Eva Marie match. And I put the phone down, I paid attention to everything, and I was like,
I almost did a legit spit take there at the irony of the fact that you were playing Clash of Clans.
I was playing Clash of Clans. And then like the second week, I was just like, I don't even think she was on the second week. So it was like the third week she was on TV again. And again, I was playing Siege Fall this time, and I was like, I put it down. But I didn't really put it down, because I was like, I know what to expect now. So it was like I was still playing the game, but I was looking up at the screen, and it's bad, man. It was like every couple of seconds you'd look up and you'd catch like a mistake or something, like a sloppy move from her. And it was just like, okay, she's still, it's expected. She's still green. She's nervous when she gets out there. I'm going to cut her some slack. And now she's just straight like KOing people in the ring. Like, come on.
Don't you know she's green?
No, fuck that. She's supposed to be all red everything.
You know
what
she needs?
People.
She needed somebody like a diva version of Bubba Ray. She needed somebody like Paige out there whipping her ass. You know what I mean? When she messes up, she needs someone saying, you want to play rough? And just whipping her ass all over the ring, and then go cry to like the higher ups about it. You know, that's what she really needed. Because you notice, when you work with Paige, you get straightened out real quick.
Mm-hmm.
It's sink or swim with her, because she'll kick your ass. She'll kick your ass and tell you fuck you. I mean, like, I didn't know I wasn't allowed to kick your ass or say the F word.
She's like, I thought we were sparring. This is how I spar.
Yeah. Don't mess with her. That's what they need to do. Put her with Paige. But I wouldn't wish that on Paige. All right.
She's got to learn. Fuck it.
Yeah. Well, I've already given up on her. Please retire. We thought she was saying all red everything, and she's actually saying horrid everything.
Aww.
We misheard.
Did you just make that up on the spot?
No. I've been using that for a few days.
Okay.
Oh, boy. I'm hearing that Vince McMahon is back to micromanaging everything also, like all aspects of the company, and that this is due to the low ratings recently.
The ratings drop, of course.
Even though those ratings are probably due to football season. But like lately, creative has been checking to see if Vince likes stuff before launching it, and he's been a lot more hands-on on what's going on. He probably hasn't been enjoying Raw either.
I mean, this week was a step up from the week before.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Last week was just very dry. This week had a better pacing to it. Even though they only had two matches by the end of the first hour, everything else seemed significant.
Was it only two matches? I was just so into it, I didn't realize.
Yeah, we had two matches.
Mm.
Scott Hall did an appearance on another wrestling podcast where he was asked about pro wrestling and if it would ever get as big as it was on the Monday Night War era. And he said that the economy was different than it was then and it was stronger, and that he thinks that there was less entertainment options and that there's so many things now that people can view, not just cable, there's online, and he thinks that that cuts into it. And then he mentions that wrestling shows aren't necessarily that good of ratings like it did in the 90s, but he considers WWE to be a much bigger company than it was in his era. And that overall he thinks wrestling companies will get bigger and that the WWE machine is a lot stronger than it was when he was there. And when you go to TV, it's unbelievable the production that's going on. And that they have their network and their camera guys filming there, and that it's going well.
Yeah, I'll agree with him on that. I mean, as much as we sit here, we have a podcast about wrestling. Like, I don't think it'll be as big as it was in like the 90s, early 2000s.
This goes back to what I told you, though, where I think it's bigger in a different way. All of the different platforms and various things are now sharing into those views.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
It's definitely not a bad thing.
Yeah, it's not a bad thing. I just say it just won't. I don't see it blowing up like it did back then, even with everything that is out there available for people.
Well, I have some WWE 2K16 news here.
It's probably going to be the last week of WWE 2K16 news, so I'll let you release this one since I did like all the others.
Yeah, so the community manager of the 2K forums, Brian Vore, said that the reason NXT Divas didn't make the roster is because of the process of adding superstars to the game.
Bullshit.
And, his statement says that when we travel to the scanning sessions, we scan everyone that we can get into our scan booth. WWE superstars and divas are very busy, so we take time every opportunity to scan them regardless of whether or not we were using the scans for the upcoming game. We want to have as many scans as possible because the scan is a starting point for us adding someone to the game. It is true that it only takes around 5 to 10 minutes to scan the superstars and divas, but that is step one in a long process. After they've been scanned in, it takes the team about 2 months to complete modeling work from start to finish. The kicker is that the model is only part of the work required to add a superstar and diva into the game. Entrances, moves, taunts, attire, music, roster all need to get developed. In addition, they need to record commentary for each superstar and diva, which is a large undertaking all in its own. So, as we can see, scanning a superstar and diva is the least amount of work involved in getting someone into the game. And that was his justification for everything.
I mean, we know that now. They've actually given us the power to just like take their faces, scan it, and like plaster it on a body and make the model from scratch.
I wish that they were able to do more updates or afterwards and stuff. I don't understand why they can't scan them afterwards and upload them into the game.
Like the other 2K games, like their NBA games and whatnot. Yeah, I don't get it.
We should be getting more updates.
Yeah, and then they've already said right out of the gate that they're not going to do like a NXT Divas DLC pack. So, you know, that's like, what, 4 or 5 slots for Divas that you got to use up in your game.
Yeah, pretty much. But apparently there's some new updates and stuff. You can now customize individual body part sizes to make the bodies come out a lot closer to the actual people. Not just the body type, but individual body part sizes. So you can really get them down to a science. Just a correction. Also, Ryback is in the game, not Rhino. Rhino was a typo in a previous update tweet.
I saw that. Yeah.
There's three.
They mentioned it twice. They said his name twice. Yeah.
There's three new confirmed characters: Rosa Mendes, Sherry Martel, and Ted DiBiase. I believe they're being used in a managerial form. I don't know if they're wrestlers.
I'm pretty sure it's gonna just be managers.
Austin has some WCW stuff, like his U.S. title match against Ricky Steamboat as an unlockable content if you beat the Jake Roberts King of the Ring match. And he also has some old school ECW stuff too. So there's unlockable Austin stuff, even though his road technically starts at the Jake match. There's going to be past stuff too.
Oh, okay. I figured that's why we had characters like Mikey Whipwreck in there.
Yeah, so that's definitely something to look forward to. Like we've mentioned many times before on our Twitch channel, we'll be live streaming it when it comes out. And we'll be also porting over some of those video clips to the YouTube channel so you guys can check them out there. Also in other news, Jake is afraid of snakes. Did you know about that?
I did not know that.
Yeah, Jake's afraid of snakes, man.
So it opens up with you going to get Jake, basically, and then what I found amazing, you bring him to Atlanta to live with. That is a commitment by a friend.
He's a little, he's a 12-foot king cobra.
No lie.
He had 20 years earlier. He had three cats and a wife. And
he was gone. And now he's got no cats and no wife. And a second wife.
And a fatter cobra.
Yeah, I'm like, Dallas, I lost.
Where did the snake go?
And I started looking for it. He's like, she'll be here any minute. I'm like, exit stage right, because I'm not going to take, you know, because I know she's going to go off, man.
Actually, what happened was he looks like Mo Lowry and Curly looking, because he's afraid of snakes.
Yeah, I hate snakes.
I'm not kidding.
Really? Really?
Yeah, it's a gimmick.
But you travel.
Jesus Christ, guys, grow up. It's television.
You picked the wrong gimmick. Wrong.
Childhood ruined.
You guys didn't know a wrestling face.
Seriously.
Yeah. Your name rhymes with that. That's fucking the, you should have picked a different animal.
Yeah. A different gimmick.
The best night I ever had, man.
You could have dropped kittens on the wrestlers. All right. Well, I was hoping for a little more.
I liked it.
You were a strip joint with
Undertaker. Jake's telling a strip joint story.
I was a strip joint with Undertaker. And Bimbo comes up and just starts going off on, you wrestlers ain't nothing. Y'all crap. You found any pieces. You know, just going on. It's like, babe, what do you want, a tip? You know, what the hell? And she's like, wait a minute. You're the one with that mechanical snake, ain't
mechanical?
You? I'm like, she's like, you phony bastard. I ain't like these other bimbos in here. I'm not stupid. I know what it is. It's a mechanical snake. And if you had it with you, I'd dance hundreds of years ago. Go get that son of a bitch.
Gotta love Undertaker.
She walked over the bag and there's nothing in there. Grabs it. She's like, bubblegum going like this. She grabs the old pole, starts swinging. I'm like, come on, do something. And the cobra rears back, sights in. Perfect nipple.
No! Bit her nipple?
And hung on.
Bit her nipple.
The cobra is devenomized by this. Yeah.
No, I'm not.
That's awesome. Like, that is ridiculous. A nipple-biting snake.
I like how they had to add in, oh, it was devenomized at that point.
Yeah, of course. Otherwise, she'd be dead and we'd be telling a different story.
You'd be like, yeah, and then 6 months later, they put me in the slammer next to Snuka.
Yeah. Oh. No, you did not go there, man. Are you telling me it's time for another one of these sessions? No, not today. There wasn't that much crime this week. New listeners are like, what the fuck was that?
Oh, you'll find out soon enough.
You'll find out when there's crime.
Yeah.
Because wherever there's crime, there's... All right. Go listen to past episodes if you want to know what we're talking about. We've used it frequently. The Rock has announced that he's the new spokesperson for Ford Cars. And I couldn't help but think, remember back when Susan Lucci had that gig?
I don't remember that, but okay.
Yeah, Susan Lucci used to be the spokesperson, and now it's Rock. Big shoes to fill, Rock. Big shoes.
Right. You
know? But I know he does this gig to take care of all his children. See what I did there?
I was to say, doesn't he has like one and then the other one on the way?
Yeah, he's expecting another one.
Yeah.
That's an 18-year bill, man. You got to give that motherfucker credit. He's like, hey, look, I'm going to go work for Ford. I mean, imagine I told you right now that you're stuck with Netflix for 18 years. Even though you like Netflix, you'd still question it a little bit.
I don't like Netflix.
Oh, you see? Now imagine that. Look how fast it happened.
Yeah, it's like I went on Netflix the other day and I was just going through it and I was like, there's a lot of shit on here and it's not good stuff.
The TNA thing, just to go back to real quick, JR spoke about it a little bit. And he spoke about the Bound for Glory. And oh, by the way, that was Opie that we got that Jake the Snake clip from that we were listening to. Oh,
okay.
So check out the Opie YouTube channel if you guys want more stuff like that. I wanted to make sure I got that plug in there. But anyway, JR spoke about the Bound for Glory thing, and he spoke about Bobby Roode versus Bobby Lashley. And he said that it was a damn good match, and he also thought that the Wolves tag title bout was good, and he enjoyed two of his favorites in Gail Kim and Awesome Kong, but he thought that the finish could have been better strategized. As far as Eric Young and Kurt Angle go, he was impressed with Eric Young's skill. He liked the whole heel thing, and Kurt Angle is still a badass and effective, as long as he's not overexposed. And then Angle at WrestleMania... Texas versus Brock Lesnar would be a massive hit, but it seems that the decision makers in WWE don't share his optimism but he might be wrong. And then he spoke about the main event, and he says, never book two fan favorites versus one villain in the triple threat match. It won't work as a rule and did not work as it could have or should have. No issues with Matt Hardy winning the TNA title by pinning Drew Galloway, while EC3 remained undefeated, but he did lose the title. The champion losing the title without being pinned or submitted is as lame as being able to win a cage match by escaping the cage. And he graded the show a C+, because it had some good moments, including the talent working hard, but some of the booking was suspect in his opinion.
Just some of it? Okay.
You know, well, that's a classy way of him saying that he fucking didn't like it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to call bullshit on of two of his favorites being Awesome Kong and Gail Kim, because isn't he the one that's reported as telling her she was too fat to be a diva?
Too fat to fly. I don't know. I don't know what was going on with that. Also, just to remind everyone, Wednesday, NXT TakeOver, which is the Respect card that they're doing.
History in the making.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about that card. We're just going to run down the card and some predictions really quick, like we always do. First matchup is Asuka against Dana Brooke. What do you got going on with this one?
Come on, clearly you know Asuka's going to win.
Exactly. Asuka's debut match. This is showing her off. She's there to beat Dana Brooke and go over. Next, we have Apollo Crews against Tyler Breeze.
Crews is going over again. Obvious.
I'm going to choose Breeze.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's go. We'll have 1-1 there. I'm going to go with Tyler Breeze here. They just gave him a new finisher, didn't they? He's been using Christian's Unprettier on NXT for the past couple of weeks, right?
Yeah, he has, actually.
Yeah, maybe.
Because the beauty shot isn't as protected as it used to be.
Not just that, but you're going to want to have something. Tyler Breeze is a good talent. I liked him when he was Mike Dalton in FCW before he had this whole gimmick. I was always strongly behind him. He's a student of Lance Storm. And when you're going to have someone who's going to actually have a good gimmick but be a serious wrestler, you're going to want a serious finisher. And I always thought that the Unprettier, a.k.a. the Gothic Face Drop, as they called it during the Brood era, was a good finisher. One of my favorites.
I mean, it works as the Unprettier. It already has the fucking name.
Yeah, pretty much. So there, that's that match. Next, we have the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic Semifinals, which will be Rhino and Baron Corbin against Chad Gable and Jason Jordan.
I'm going to say Gable and Jordan.
So am I. I really like this Gable and Jordan thing. I'm kind of annoyed that Jordan's becoming a little bit more, like Gable's rubbing off on him, it seems, like when we're watching NXT. He's a little bit more cheerful and happy and stuff, but when they get in the ring, they really handle their business.
Dude, it's like the new age world's greatest tag team.
Yeah, and I dislike Baron Corbin enough that I would sacrifice Rhino to be done with both of them. So goodbye, Rhino and Corbin, hopefully. The other semifinal match is Samoa Joe and Finn Balor versus Scott Dawson and Dash Wilder.
You already know who's winning that. We don't even need to call that.
Yeah, it's surprising that Scott Dawson and Dash Wilder win over Enzo Amore and Colin Cassidy. I thought that was the upset of the tournament so far.
Yeah.
Which I found suspicious. I hope that doesn't mean that they're going to push these two guys yet, because they shouldn't.
But pretty sure they're not going to. They don't have any actual gimmick there for them to go over.
Right, right. So I'm going with you on this one. I'm going to say Samoa Joe and Finn Balor are the winners there. And ironically, the next match we can only predict based on if we're right about the next two matches, because it's the classic finals, which, assuming that we're correct, it will be Chad Gable and Jason Jordan against Samoa Joe and Finn Balor.
So clearly it's going to be Gable and Jordan taking the victory if they do win.
So you think Gable and Jordan and then Joe and Balor have a miscommunication that leads to a feud between them?
Yeah, because Balor's already our champion, so.
And that would make the most sense. I'm right there with you on that one.
Yeah.
And then that leads us to our main event, which would be the 30-minute Iron Man match for the NXT Women's title. Sasha Banks against Bayley. Who do you got for the 30 minutes?
Obviously, it's going to be Bayley.
Yeah. I kind of don't like that it's that predictable. I almost want them to go Sasha just to show that just because you're on the main roster doesn't mean there can't be an upset.
Yeah, but you got to factor in from the minute she got to the main roster. That's how I knew that Bayley was going to win the belt in the first place. When Sasha got to the main roster, she never had that NXT Women's Championship with her. Like, remember when we had Kevin Owens? Owens would come out with the NXT Championship every week. Sasha would come out without the belt. So I was like, they're prepping her to get rid of the belt.
Could be. I still wish there was some other way to do it, but I get it. I get how the system works. That's the problem with understanding the internal workings of this.
Doesn't mean you can't enjoy the match.
It doesn't. I'd like to see more with Bayley, though. She's the one I'm unfortunately the least convinced about out of the four horsewomen.
Really? I figured it would have been Becky.
Nah, definitely not. Becky, although has her unusual characteristics, which is mainly her voice, her mic skills is really what we've always had a problem with. Aside from that, she is like definitely very experienced. And let's keep in mind, she's Paige's old tag team partner from the indies. It was Paige and her and the mom. Paige's mom was the manager.
Yeah, that, and she's credited Finn Balor for training her also.
Yeah, well, she was part of his school and stuff.
Yeah.
So predictably, Bayley would retain for that one. So those are our NXT TakeOver Respect card predictions. Let's see how many of those turn out correct. In other news, we have Kelly Kelly, who wants to wrestle Paige. And I was thinking to myself that it's funny because Kelly Kelly's been gone for so long. You know, like, now you want to come back?
She wasn't that relevant when she was around. Like, I remember she was champion for a while, and it was one of those points where I was watching it, and I was like, of all the women that you have on the roster, this is the one.
Kelly Kelly.
Yeah. It's like, this is the one you have as your champion. She wasn't that good.
Yeah, and she said that she feels like all the girls who are there now she's worked with, the Bella Twins are still there, Natty's still there, Alicia Fox is still there, Mendes is still there, and all the girls, there's not many new ones. And she says maybe Paige, and when she left, she came in, so she thinks she'd like to be someone who she'd work with for sure. And I was thinking to myself, you know what, Kelly? I'd like to see you bottomless, but we can't always get what we want, Kelly. You know, like, so what? I don't care what she wants. You know, saying that she wants to come back and work with divas is basically saying, AKA, my modeling gig didn't work out since I look like every other fucking model in the entire world.
Pretty much.
And now I want to come back to WWE. No. It's too late. We have actual divas now, like, you know, the ones that can wrestle. No, I don't want to see Barbie blank back here.
I forgot that's what she goes by outside of the wrestling world.
I made it personal there. Called her by her real, by her model name. Vader was offered $5,000 to have a shoot fight in October.
I literally just opened that window.
And he's
what
still,
are the odds?
He's still thinking about it. Like, there's no details. They don't say who it's against. We don't even know who the promotion is. But he was offered this.
I'm literally looking at, it's the picture of him smiling with his Vader mask on.
One of the funniest things while we're talking about Vader is that WWE's closed caption was hacked. And there's shots you could find online. Maybe I'll post some on the Facebook page. But during the entire Total Divas episode, anytime anyone said anything, the closed caption just said, Vader time, Vader time, Vader time, Vader time, Vader time, Vader time. And it's funny because I have all these shots of like Nikki and Brie talking, and underneath this just says, Vader time, Vader time, Vader time.
That's awesome.
I'm such a kid because I find that so much more amusing than I should. Like, I was looking at the shots earlier and I was just cracking up. Like, can you imagine a deaf person watching Total Divas? They sit down and the fucking Divas are sitting on talking, Vader time, Vader time, Vader time. Even the very final screen of Total Divas, that white screen that shows the logo before it goes off, that whole thing, on the bottom was like, Vader time, Vader time. You see what I mean about how wrestling has become an entertainment empire? Like, even the things that you don't mean to. Like, that to me is one of the funniest things ever, man. Vader time, Vader time, Vader time.
I don't know why that's getting more of a laugh out of me than I originally thought it would have.
Because it's funny. It's really fucking funny. When you look at those screenshots, they are priceless. It's just Vader time. Like, these people could have said whatever they wanted. They could have said, fuck off. They could have just put cock across the bottom of the screen. But they're Vader time. Marks. They said Vader time, Vader time, Vader time. you gotta love Marks, man. That's why when I say what's up, fellow Marks, I say it with the utmost love.
We're not calling you jabrons over here.
Yeah, you're not jabrons. You're not having catering with TNA. Oh, boy. And Medusa shot some heat at the Divas, apparently. Just my opinion. I believe it about halfway through this promo, which was a badass promo. The moment and mood Miss Nikki Bella was in, she heard my name being yelled from the audience on WWE Monday Night Raw and threw up her hand as I threw up in my mouth to just ignore the fact that forever existence of Alundra Blaze is the real revolutionary that started this revolution. Will never, ever go away.
Yeah, I've seen it. It's just like she took offense to pretty much Nikki's mannerisms.
Yeah, well, anyway, she's calling them overrated and saying that half of them can't wrestle and that some just sound illiterate as soon as they open their mouths and so disrespectful, and that if she was them, she'd be watching their back because you never know who might show up, who might bitch slap them across their face and ask for a receipt.
Yeah, because she said something about, like, Natty might use her as her partner to come back.
Yeah, and she said that she is 50 past her time and she's been reported as an ugly bitch. And she has three words. You can call me boss ass bitch.
Okay.
And JR feels that they're trying to get too many girls over at once. He says that Charlotte needs the women's spotlight, which will facilitate the chase from the other women who seek to be champion. But it seems as if WWE is trying to get too many of the ladies over at one time, and that won't work. They've assembled the best female roster in the company since the Attitude Era, nonetheless. In a nutshell, he guesses he expected more from the WWE women on Raw, and they've become one of the freshest aspects of the show. But he didn't get it. So everyone's a little bit disappointed at the way this Divas thing has turned out here.
I get what he's saying. Like, they pretty much just tried to throw everybody over in there at once and get everybody over, and it's not working. It's falling flat. Nobody cares about the storyline anymore.
Mm-hmm. And in other news, we have Stone Cold, who said that he's going to boycott Mania if Michael Hayes is not inducted into this year's Hall of Fame as a single guy, which he feels he should have been since 2011 at 27. WrestleMania, where he was at the Georgia Dome in Atlanta. But in Dallas, Texas, with so much that he brought to the Von Erich family with the Freebirds, and he said he won't attend.
I mean, I don't really have anything to add to that. I mean, I do agree with a lot of what he said. He should have been inducted a while back as a singles wrestler, but...
Yeah, it almost feels like they're waiting for him to die so that they just don't have to do it, right? Like, ask for it. He's the last Freebird alive.
That would be the thing, though. They would wait until he dies and then induct him and have, like, somebody that's not even related to him in any way come out and accept it.
I hate when that happens. Then we have to sit through a Hall of Fame speech of someone we don't know.
Like, I was the nanny to his kids.
Yeah, no, we definitely don't want that. That cannot happen.
Unacceptable. I knew it. I knew it. Condition! Unacceptable!
You knew it was coming, didn't you?
I knew it was coming as soon as you said it.
Oh, man. WWE stopping Jim Neidhart from selling t-shirts.
I saw that.
Because ProWrestlingTees.com launched a t-shirt line for Neidhart. And then WWE tried to block the shirts from being sold due to Neidhart's exclusive merchandise contract with them. And Pro Wrestling Tees tweeted and said, WWE says Jim Neidhart can't sell his own shirts. They don't own his name, nor the Hart Foundation. Yet he cannot sell his own tees. So classy, WWE. Now I'm told they have an exclusive merchandise contract with Jim Neidhart. Then where the fuck is all of his merchandise at WWE? Gross. And Cole Cabana and CM Punk, who also sell shirts through that website, commented and said, they basically, Cabana called WWE bullies, and then Punk said, allegedly. Yeah, it's a little weird how they have become a little bit
threatened. Yeah, over a t-shirt from somebody who wasn't even over in his prime. Like, come on.
You know what it is? They feel threatened because that place has way better shirts than the WWE.
They do.
Shirts.
They definitely do. You know, I have more CM Punk shirts from them than I do from WWE.
Yeah, those people get creative. They go in with their shirt designs. When you're looking at it like, who wouldn't want these? These are awesome. There's a plug right there, Pro Wrestling Tees.
You hear that? The Make a Talk Brunch t-shirt, man.
Yeah, well, they follow us and we follow them, so you never know.
Yeah.
That is awesome, and I do agree with them on that. They need to stop. WWE gets salty when things get over that they don't make. We've always known that about them. You've seen Finn Balor's Titantron, right? They have the Balor Club.
They got the Balor Club, yeah. Are but they had Balor me? Club shirts before that was even like a big thing.
Yeah, but the Bullet Club was big before Finn Balor even came over, though, so.
Right.
You know, they know what they're doing. They definitely know what they're doing as far as that goes. Seth Rollins' girlfriend, Zahara Schreiber, popped up at an indie event. She was at Saturday's Dreamwave Wrestling Show.
All Nazi'd out.
In Illinois. She made an appearance as the new manager for Donovan DeHansen? DeHansen? I don't know any of these guys. You would think that I'm reading a TNA card. But anyway, here's a little audio from that.
For the better part of this year, I've been trying to find something that works for me here in LaSalle at Dreamwave Wrestling. So I paired myself up with Brubaker, Rough Crossing, and Eric Cannon. But something seemed to be missing. Well, I found that something back home.
A Nazi.
Zara Schreiber from the House of Truth, where I trained.
You may think you know,
but you have no idea. Hell comes to LaSalle.
Hi, Hitler. It had to be said.
It definitely did.
All right. Well, before we wrap things up, we should talk about WWE. Remember them? Like, they had some cards over this week.
They did. Oh, we're not addressing that Hornswoggle news.
What was the news? We addressed it last week that he violated the wellness policy.
Yeah, there's an update.
Uh-oh.
It's speculated that they didn't catch any drugs in his system or anything like that. What had happened was they did a surprise visit to his house, and they said after 3 hours he was unable to produce a urine sample.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So that they didn't find any drugs because they don't have any urine.
Right.
Why was he unable to produce a urine sample?
I don't know. He didn't drink enough water? I don't know.
That dude is like, what, 4 feet tall? Get him a fucking Fanta and put him in front of a fucking toilet. I would give him I'd fire his ass. Are you kidding me? You expect me to believe that in 3 hours you couldn't produce a urine sample?
Yeah.
Dude, there's Gatorade down the street. Sip a couple of these. We have all day. There's no way Gatorade. I would have let him get away with that one.
Yeah, they couldn't give him Gatorade and pretzels, and it's like they couldn't find a corner store that had some.
I would have gotten him a beer. Got him. I know he drinks. Come on, man.
Yeah, he definitely drinks. Yeah.
Wow, what was so bad that he didn't want to piss?
I don't know.
It's worse than if he did. He's John Jonesing it, right? I'm surprised he didn't run out of his house and run down the street and come back later.
You know, like, probably has steroids in his system.
It's better to be honest about what you do than to do it and be. Why the fuck would he have steroids in his system?
Dude,
what, is he going to have a trial by combat?
In person, have you? He's fucking huge in person.
Yeah, but he doesn't need to be huge at that height. What difference does it make when you're huge when you're short?
I don't know, man. He could be bench pressing little midget ladies. I don't know.
Oh, come on, man. This whole thing makes no sense whatsoever. Who booked this? Dixie Carter? Just the most inconsistent, strange shit ever. You got to love the world of wrestling, man. Holy crap.
Right. I do have one more piece of news before we jump into the MSG thing. It's Mick Foley news, which I meant to mention earlier. He apparently apologized to Amanda.
Really? The chick that he was upset at for the whole
slut-shaming? Slut-shaming of Sarah Lee, yeah.
What's the apology for?
He went on Twitter and he goes, at Tough Amanda, I am deeply sorry for being so critical of you on Tough Enough without knowing my facts. Please accept my sincere apology. To which she replies, apology accepted, of course. Thank you, Mick Foley.
She must have gave him some pussy. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Totally bang, bang. Kidding.
But that is kind of weird, right? Like, he just suddenly about-faced on Amanda.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe someone spoke to him in the business and said she's okay. She must have something about her. They like, if they're going to allow her into Total Divas, like, she's essentially an outsider.
After she lost the thing, too. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see what's going on with that.
Yeah.
She definitely had the look for it more than the other girl, Sarah Lee.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, Sarah Lee's supposed to be like their new AJ.
Mm-hmm.
Not in terms of wrestling skill, but like a small, petite girl who's supposed to be like homely.
Exactly. Holy crap, so this is going to be one of our legendary long episodes.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. We could breeze through this.
Yeah, we're going to have to do our traditional thing. Those of you that made it this far, just tweet us, message us. You know, hashtag I made it. I want to know how many of you made it through this run. I know you rant the M guys. You have shows that are just as long, even longer than this. You're used to that shit. But as far as the rest of you guys out there, even the rant the M guys, all of you, hashtag I made it. Did you sit through all of this banter?
Got a mouthful of something to say? Let the guys know. Be sure to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and subscribe to us on YouTube. TalkBrunch.com.
All right, so the Madison Square Garden card, I don't know, you could spend as much time. I'm leaving these last two cards in your hands, or at least MSG, when you could spend as much or as little time. To me, it was a typical house show.
There was something about it. I don't know if it was just like the camera or anything, but it was just, as soon as the show started, like I was watching it, and it seemed different.
Yeah, they taped the house show. If you've ever been to the Garden for house shows, which I've been there for many, it has.
No, it didn't seem like that. It didn't seem like I was watching a taped house show. Maybe it's just me and
a live house
show. MSG. It felt like an old school, like late 90s, like early 2000 pay-per-view.
Yeah, I even jokingly said that if you want lighting like this, watch WrestleMania 3. You know, it did have that, but they generally have less stuff. There's no pyros over there. There's a lot.
There was no pyro. Yeah. And then it was like, I don't know. It was like one of the hard mics was like right in the crowd. Cause it was one girl that you could hear like throughout the whole event. Like anything she said, the microphone was picking it up pretty hard.
Yeah. And their camera crew wasn't comfortable the way our camera crew normally is. You can see that there were times that the camera was shooting awkwardly or it didn't quite know what it should be doing. Just a minor critique, not a major deal here, you know. But I'm just saying it's one of those things where I did notice differences. I get what you're saying. But at the end, at its core, show-wise, it was a typical house show to me. Like, how would you rate it? What is it? Did anything stand out to you?
Well, let's see. The first match was Sheamus and Rusev versus Orton and Dolph Ziggler. I like the end of the match when Sheamus goes for the bro kick, but Orton just kind of like he does a neo sidestep like he was dodging a bullet. Then Sheamus gets hit with the super kick, and then he stumbles into an RKO by Randy Orton. I thought that was a unique way to finish the match.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, I did pick up earlier on in the match also where there was like an obvious point where they were calling spots to each other. I thought like they could have hit that better. Next match on the card was Stardust versus Neville. I don't know why they were doing shake, rattle, and roll taunts. I feel like I missed inside joke there. Neville hit a pretty cool springboard moonsault to the outside. Stardust hit that side effect that you said you noticed he's been doing. I don't know why he decided to go and pick up Neville's cape and put it on and run around the ring like an idiot.
And go, ah! But, like a fool, yeah. Don't get too silly with it, Stardust. Stay a good villain. He's doing the Joker thing now, but do a good Joker. Don't fuck up and take the cape.
Yeah, the whole cape thing ends up costing him the match because he leaps off the top rope. It looked like, well, that's what they said. It looks like he was signaling to go for the red arrow, but he just jumps off and then he gets hit by Neville, who ends the match with the red arrow.
Batman reference for any of you people and then watch the animated series there.
I was like, who do I know that from?
Yeah, he's playing the Joker, right? That seems to be channeling Mark Hamill's Joker.
Yeah, yeah. Doing it better than Sting did when he tried to do the Joker over in TNA.
Yeah, well, Sting was just doing doofy Joker.
Yeah. Next up on the card was Team Bella versus Team PCB. First thing that stood out to me is Alicia Fox looks great in the ring no matter who she's with.
Yeah, definitely. I've always said that about her.
Which it makes me go back to Tough Enough, and it's like, okay, that's why they chose her as the person for them to have their match against. Because whether she's on the offensive or the defensive, like, she looks amazing.
Yeah, she's someone who's definitely going to make your stuff look good no matter what.
Yeah, and this was pretty much your basic 3-on-3 tag match. Nothing really big happened, except for the ending that I had got mixed up earlier, where Paige kept trying to tag herself in, and then finally when she gets a little overwhelmed and she goes to the corner for the tag. Charlotte and Becky jump off of the turnbuckle, off the apron. She gets up. Nikki puts her in the rack attack and gets the win. And then they had the very weird segment with her going, why would you guys do this to me?
Yeah, she's in the middle of the ring, practically in tears. Why would they do this? I can't believe my partners did this to me.
Yeah. I don't know. It felt very weird to me. Next up was Jericho versus Kevin Owens.
What did you think of this match?
Huh?
No, I was saying, what did you think of this match?
I liked this match. I think I was surprised. I didn't know Jericho was supposed to be there. If they announced it, I must have missed it prior to. So I was surprised to see
Jericho pop up.
What was it? It was his anniversary.
25th anniversary. 25th
anniversary. Lance Storm was in attendance. Cyrus was there. Cyrus looks great.
Like, I was worried that he was about to retire or something when he started the speech.
Oh, I wasn't even thinking that. I was just like, oh, wow, cool. Very pointless thing I noticed. I don't know why I didn't notice it before. Jericho's arm is like pretty much almost fully tatted up now. He almost has a complete sleeve.
Yeah, he's starting to look a little bit older, but still looks good for his age. But I do see the age in him a little bit more now.
Yeah. I mean, like he's getting really slow. Like one of the things I noticed, when he went for his Wall to Jericho attempt, the one that always gets reversed and he gets spun into the air. Like, he popped back up and he hit an enziguri, but it was a very, like, slow, kind of sloppy enziguri. I liked when Owens goes for the pop-up powerbomb, but Jericho reverses it into the Codebreaker attempt, and then Steen reverses it into the Steenalyzer.
You love that Steenalyzer.
What else was in there? He did the bulldog to the lion salt, but Owens gets the knees up, throws him into the corner, hits him with the cannonball. Owens goes up for the swanton bomb, but Jericho gets his knees up. He ends up hitting a code breaker. And I wasn't too happy with the ending, where it was the super kick into the pop-up powerbomb, which got reversed into a Hurricane Rana, into the Wall to Jericho attempt that got reversed into a schoolboy for the win on Kevin Owens' part.
Right, but it wasn't just a schoolboy. He pokes him in the eye and then puts him into the schoolboy.
Yeah. That seems like that's going to be his new trump card.
Yeah, so I didn't mind that too much. Very good match.
Yeah. I'd say probably the best one.
Good use of Jericho putting people over. It seems like the only big mistake they've made with Jericho in the past years is putting Fandango over him at a Mania, which now they fucked up because, well, it is the truth. You know, they messed up because Fandango's not a big star. It didn't work out, but they had such confidence that at the time putting Jericho over, well, putting Fandango over Jericho at Mania, which everyone's going to remember because it's a Mania, it's like a blemish on the card, you know?
Yeah. Next up, we had the Dudleys versus the New Day, and this was your basic Dudley's match. The Dudleys came out strong. They ended up getting the what's up early in the match. Well, the attempt of the what's up, but Xavier Woods jumps up on the apron and shoves off Devon. Kofi ends up getting hit with the 3D. Woods runs in, causes the DQ. He doesn't realize at this point the New Day is setting up the tables to put, I guess, was it Devon through the table? Yeah, they were setting it up to put Devon through the table. Woods has his back turned to him as he's playing. I don't know what song he was playing on his little trumpet, but Bubba runs in, tosses out Big E. They toss out, Kofi, and then Woods turns around to get the escape. He turns around to run away, but Bubba catches him with the clothesline on the outside, and then they throw him back in for another 3D through the table.
Yeah. Well, those guys all seem to work very well together. So I did enjoy everything that was going on.
Yeah. And it was a cool match.
Not jumping too far ahead, but you see what I'm talking about? Everything I predicted about New Day has happened literally in order. I told you that the next step was they needed to really kick somebody's ass now.
Yeah.
You know, and look at tonight, but we'll get into that. Like, let's get into the MSG and finish this up.
All right. This was the big point everybody was waiting for, the Big Show versus Brock Lesnar match. It was very funny and weird to see, like, Brock gets in the ring, he goes right after Big Show, and he legit bounced off of Big Show like two times when he tried to attack him. He goes for the double leg takedown, Big Show tosses him to the outside, he gets back in, he gets choke slammed, then he picks him up, then choke slams him again, then he picks him up, then choke slams him again. Then it looked like Big Show was pretty much manhandling him for the whole match, which was pretty cool. They didn't make Big Show look weak.
I like the way Brock Lesnar has been selling choke slams in this match and the one with The Undertaker, where he gets bounced to his feet and staggers away and leans on the ropes instead of being laid out by the choke slam. I mentioned that when he did it with Taker, but just the fact that he's such a big beast that it hits him and it sort of staggers him, not really knocks him out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've always thought that was really cool. Very good addition to the Brock Lesnar stuff.
Yeah, after the triple choke slam, he goes for the KO punch, but it gets reversed into a suplex. He picks him up, suplexes him again, picks him up, hits a German, picks him up, does a body slam, and then ends up hitting the F5 for the win. He goes up the ramp, comes back down, attacks him again, and hits him with another belly-to-belly before hitting another F5 on the Big Show.
Yeah, really well done.
Yeah, it was a good match. Like, Big Show didn't get steamrolled throughout the whole match.
Nope.
Then we have the main event, Rollins versus Cena. Cena comes out and kisses somebody. I'm assuming it's his grandmother.
Yeah, I've seen her before. I've seen her in crowds before. I believe it is.
Okay. Pretty basic cage match at this point. Rollins opens up. He slams Cena into the cage several times. He tries to go through the door, but Cena tries to climb out. So then he has to go back, pull him back in. He goes for that knee spot where he hits you in the face with the knee off the top rope. You can see Cena taking no chance. He clearly blocks it.
Oh, yeah, like, yeah. You see how careful Cena is now with his face? I'm glad you noticed that. He protects that shit.
Cena hits the electric chair drop. I hate when Cena hits that move because that was always like an edge move. So I hate to see when other people do it.
Oh, wow. I never thought about it as an edge move, but you're absolutely right.
That was Edge's signature when he was in the Brood.
Yeah.
Rollins hits his superplex into the Falcon Arrow. He goes for the escape, but Cena climbs up to the top. Attitude adjustment gets reversed into the gut kick and then followed up with that kick to the face. I don't know how to pronounce what he calls that. It's the Evita something, something. They go back and forth. Rollins gets the upper hand. He goes to climb out, but then Kane comes down. Rather than jump out onto Kane, like logically speaking, that's what anybody would do. They would jump out and then win the match and then, yeah, face the Wrath of Kane, but you would leave the new champion. He goes to jump back on Cena, who's still laid out. It looks like he was going for a frog splash. Cena rolls out of the way, hits him with the AA and pins him, retains the title, leaves the cage, and then Kane pretty much enters and destroys Rollins. And that was the end of the event.
Mm-hmm. It was decent.
Yeah, yeah. No complaints.
Exactly.
It wasn't a Bound for Glory.
Oh, wow. We lost all of our TNA listeners at this point. But hey, TNA's lost all of their viewers, so I guess technically.
But I mean, look at that. I just called that whole card, and the only complaint I really had was there were certain spots where I could see where they were clearly calling moves. That was it.
Yeah, and it was interesting to call. It was interesting to listen to you call.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say the same about the TNA stuff. We're not going to go back to that. Let's not backpedal. So before we wrap up here real quick, Raw. Raw opens up with Brock Lesnar coming to a huge pop. Unfortunately for me, I felt this was a lot of time killing. I don't really want to see like the expressions of the WrestleMania people again and again and again after Undertaker's streak was broken. You know, I don't want to see the SummerSlam stuff afterwards again and again and again. And it's just one of those things where it's like, I have the network. I paid my $9.99. If I want to see that moment again, I'll go back to it. But please stop like putting it into my stuff when I'm watching Raw. The first few minutes shouldn't have it. Just a minor gripe that I have with it. You know, I do like Paul Heyman mentioning that he doesn't recall Brock Lesnar ever having to low blow the Undertaker.
Yeah.
You know, I once again, the kid in me wanted like the Undertaker to come on the Titantron and just say something to troll him and just be like, I have mystic balls.
Of all things to say, that's what it would be.
And then just leave. That would be like the whole promo. And that was basically it. Afterwards, what happens? Big Show comes out to shake Brock Lesnar's hand, and Lesnar basically snubs him. So then
Laughs in his face and snubs him. Yeah.
And then Big Show winds up taking an F5 for pretending to be a tough guy and talking shit about Lesnar. And how he's glad that he lost twice and blah, blah, blah. And that was just another time of Big Show getting an ass beating, I guess, so that the people that weren't at the Garden, the New York Garden, could see the F5 at the Boston Garden.
What they missed, yeah.
Got F5'd across two gardens, buddy. And we had a 6-man tag match, which was Reigns, Ambrose, and Orton against the Wyatts.
I didn't care too much for this match.
Yeah, there were only a few cool spots. Reigns and Ambrose tackling Strowman out of the ring. Like the fact that it took the two of them, I thought was a cool spot there. Reigns powerbombing Harper looked very good. The ending was basically Bray went for the Sister Abigail and Orton countered it into an RKO, which Bray reversed. And then Harper used that moment to take advantage and attack Orton from behind. And he winds up getting the RKO out of nowhere, followed by the spear from Reigns for them to go over.
Mm-hmm.
Good match overall. It was what it was. It was a Raw match. I still liked it though. I think all of these guys are working very well. Strowman's still green, but he's not really imposing or fucking up the things that they are giving him to do. And they're using him sparringly, which is very smart.
He's no Eric Rowan.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. We also, I almost don't want to mention it, but we had Sheamus against Neville, which was a very short match.
I didn't get the whole point of this.
I didn't get it at all. Neville pounces in on Sheamus after getting offended, and he's beating him up against the ropes early without warning. The ref separates him momentarily to ring the bell. And then Barrett feels offended, who happens to be at ringside doing commentary at the fact that Neville did such a dirty trick. So he says that he's going to go talk to Neville, and he distracts him momentarily enough for Neville to wind up walking into a bro kick. And yeah, that was just, I guess it was a time filler. It feels like there were certain things that were time fillers on this.
Yeah, because I don't see them putting them into a feud again.
Yeah. And then we had like a WWE commercial promoting their new network card, which for 3 months, $9.99 a month, exclusively at Walmart. And as they're saying all of this, you hear Michael Cole and Byron Saxon prepping. You hear Cole saying, so Byron, you're going to be, and like it sort of fades out awkwardly over the commercial. And I'm like, uh-oh, they're having some sort of problems over there. We're not supposed to be hearing this. Just something I thought I would point out.
Yeah.
After this, we had an entrance from the director of operations, Kane, who comes out, and Seth Rollins interrupts him to tell Kane that he's no Tom Brady because we're taking jabs today. And that even though they both have deflated balls, Kane can't lie, cheat, and swindle his name into whatever he wants. And it was just a funny exchange. I really like Seth Rollins and Kane. I'm glad they managed to find a way to keep the two of them going. Whether they're teammates or enemies and the dynamic of it going back and forth, they work really well together, and I'm really entertained by the whole thing. I like the fact that Kane brought up the fact that he has a world's greatest director of operations mug.
I feel like we saw that when he first came back too.
Yeah, and then it was funny when Kane started to say in the part of the promo where he goes to be the man and everyone in the crowd starts wooing. Because they're automatically thinking he's going to say you have to beat the man. But I mean, what did they think? Yeah. He was going to send Ric Flair out there to fight fucking Seth Rollins? You know, it's just so funny that Kane went to be the man and you hear the crowd, woo! And I'm thinking to myself, I know it's not Flair. So where's this going? But then he just said you have to face your demons. And then Stephanie comes out and she announces that Rollins will fight Demon Kane for the title at, I guess, Hell in a Cell, right?
Yeah.
But then the twist to this is that if Demon Kane loses, corporate Kane loses his job. So she essentially makes it a title versus job match.
Well, not title versus job. I look at it as it's the end of corporate Kane and we're going to go back to having Demon Kane.
I hope not, because corporate Kane is a better character at this point.
Yeah, yeah. More depth.
Maybe they'll Dusty finish it. Technically, he'll win the title, but something will get reversed somehow.
I didn't think about that, but yeah, that would be the only way to save the character. Like, I find it very odd. I know Kane doesn't want to keep wrestling full time, so the corporate Kane gimmick does work for him.
It really does. I was relieved when he first came back. I was disappointed when he showed up as regular Kane because I thought, oh brother, this is gonna get dry really quickly. The last seven times he's come back to a return, it's been really like that one time he came back with the hiss in his voice. With everything that he says, and it was like, the fuck is going on here? You know, and that was like the return of the mask Kane. And from then on, it's just been like, dude, you got to stop returning. This doesn't have the impact anymore. Corporate Kane is genuinely interesting. And that's because Glenn Jacobs is a genuinely interesting person. And that reflects well when he gets to be more himself. And it's no different than The Rock and Triple H and Stone Cold, all these other people whose stories basically go where when they let us be ourselves, we really got to shine. Like, even though the Kane gimmick is cool, him being himself works so well. He's good on the mic. He's a good actor. I like it.
Yeah, I remember we've talked about this in the past about which Kane you would rather see. And we all grew up with the Demon Kane or just like regular Kane, as we know. But like, it's weird. I like corporate Kane better.
It's better for what he's doing. The role works.
Yeah.
So next we had Natty against Paige, and it was an all right match, typical match. Everyone gets their shit in because they're both professionals. Middle of the match, Paige hits the Paige Turner on Natty, and the commentary no-sells it. And I guess that move at this point is completely discredited.
Yeah, like when she hit it, I was like, I haven't seen that in a while. Like the last time I remember seeing it, I know she's used it more times, but the last time I remember it was the first time we saw her hit it on AJ.
And she did it as a regular move. Wasn't even a signature. It was just like, all right, just going to lay that in. Natty almost had no effect on it. They don't really like it anymore, but they threw it in there as regular offense.
It looked disgusting the first time she used it on Paige. Yeah. On AJ.
Yeah. AJ selling saved that. Yeah. The move itself. The first time she won the title, I know what you're talking about. I always thought it's a good thing historically that AJ saved the shit out of that. Otherwise, her first title win wouldn't be showable. So Natty went over with the sharpshooter at the second attempt of using it. Glad they're giving Natty a little props every now and then here. They need to keep that going because she's really good. Awesome body, awesome wrestler, no reason not to. Kevin Owens versus Sin Cara was a match that came up. I noticed in the entrances that even in singles competition now, Sin Cara's coming out with the Lucha Dragon music now.
I don't even remember what the original music sounds like at this point.
Oh, you know, the mystical, magical, blue lighting music. That whole thing is gone. He just comes out to the Lucha even when he's by himself, which is good. I think that works better. The Sin Cara thing I felt was a bit much. Oh, you know, like, who the hell's coming out here, you know? Like, even Rey Mysterio didn't ever have something like
that. I was about to say, they tried to put him over as the new mystic Rey Mysterio, like he's the next big deal.
Yeah, they shouldn't have done that because it's probably Kalisto. I see more Rey Mysterio in Kalisto, formerly Samurai del Sol from Evolve, than I do in Sin Cara. And you know, I've liked Sin Cara, Junico Sin Cara specifically. I've always been a fan of, even when he was regular Junico, I was saying that guy could put on a wrestling clinic. So I by no means have distaste for either of them. They're both awesome. But I think that as far as Rey Mysterio, I feel like I see a lot more of him in this guy, Del Sol.
Yeah, like a WCW Rey Mysterio.
Mm-hmm, exactly. That's what he reminds me of. The springboard moonsault that Sin Cara did, he winds up kneeing Owens in the head really hard. Hopefully we don't hear about a concussion or anything.
Nah, it looked like he was fine at the end of that.
Yeah, well, you never really could tell with those things.
Yeah, but yeah.
Owens goes over with the pop-up powerbomb, and then he beats up Kalisto for good measure. And just before he's going to hit him with the apron bomb, Ryback runs in, and Owens retreats to end that segment. Next up, we had New Day backstage, where they learned not to sing and dance around Stephanie, that's for sure.
For whatever strange reason, she was cool with it like before, but now she's not.
Yeah, no, she just wasn't in the mood.
Woods even goes, I thought she was her friend. I thought she liked us.
Yeah, and as a result of that, she announces Dudley's versus New Day's for the title at Hell in a Cell.
Wouldn't surprise me. Maybe it's a bit far-fetched if you see Spike Dudley do a run-in.
Yeah. Who knows? Why don't they get that guy, right?
I forget what he does now. I think Scotty Too Hotty's the firefighter.
Yeah, but he's accessible. He showed up at Bully Ray's wedding with the Aces and Eights thing.
Yeah, remember, that was a one-time off thing.
I'm sure with enough money, and even with just some money, they could get him back. Like, do something. I wouldn't mind.
Yeah, if they bring him in, they're going to want him for a long time. Like, I think that guy has like a wife with two kids. He's like, I think he's retired from wrestling. Right. Like, if he does come back, it'll be like a 1-2-time thing only.
Yeah, and then next we have a segment, which I'm going to let you talk about a little bit, because I know you caught it before I did, how this was all going to turn out. I caught it shortly after you. We talked about it a little. I texted you and we talked about it. But this is Kane and Rollins against the Dudleys. And immediately you point out to me that he suited Kane and that Kane never wears a suit and tie.
Yeah, he came out for the match and he was still wearing his shirt with the tie on and everything. And I was like, when does this ever happen? When he comes out to wrestle as corporate Kane, he always has his elbow pad on and like sometimes wrist tape, sometimes no wrist tape. But anyway, as soon as he came out, I'm like, they're going to do some shit where he's going to end up rolling under the ring or he's going to get taken backstage and he's going to come back as Demon Kane. And sure enough, that's what happened. The match starts off. He's selling the bad leg. So Rollins tags himself in and then Kane gets injured. The doctor's coming like, oh, we're going to have to take you backstage. And Rollins is like, no. I know what's going to happen. So he handcuffs him.
I thought that was great. The fact that he had handcuffs and was prepared to use them was fantastic. Then, like, nope, I'm going to handcuff your ass to the ring post.
Even commentary is like, who the hell handcuffs their tag team partner? It's like, what if you need to tag him and then you tag him in and he can't move? But Kane gets knocked off the apron and breaks the handcuffs in the process. So they end up pulling him backstage. Match continues. And then sure enough, the pyro goes off. And here comes Demon Kane.
Oh, boy. Just like last time. Just like on SmackDown. SmackDown to me was actually better than the MSG because they did the same thing there.
I think like they're doing that slow transition now where it's SmackDown's supposed to be taken as a legitimate show. Yeah, they just need to cut back with all the recaps of Raw. It's too much.
Well, I've never missed a SmackDown, even when it was crappy. But I've told you for a while that SmackDown's been back on point again. It's unfortunate, though, that a lot of people don't realize it because they're not emphasizing it as much. But they are trying to show the replays and stuff, and they are trying to get it over again because it will be coming back to USA. But SmackDown's been good lately. Last week, SmackDown was actually better than that MSG. But unfortunately, it was SmackDown, so not as many people saw it.
Yeah. So the finish on this is the Dudleys hit Kane with the 3D.
Yeah.
Yeah, they hit him with the 3D. Then Rollins comes back in.
With the table from outside, and he sets it up.
Yeah, he takes the table. He sets it up to put Kane through the table, but Kane ends up catching him, which I thought Kane was going to do the old school sit-up. But he catches him in the choke slam position, gets up, and then he choke slams him through the table.
Yeah. Good segment. Progresses that feud well.
Yeah, it works.
And we got a table bump. Nothing wrong there.
Yeah.
And then this goes to the six diva tag match that we had that was coming up afterwards. And what I like about this is they had Team Bella rolling up in the parking lot in Boston and running into Team Bad outside. And they had that little altercation.
The stretch limo runs into the Escalade. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That was a cool moment. Then they wind up throwing Nikki's hat, her Yankees hat. And although this is a small scene, it's something WWE's been missing that adds some level of relevance to the feuds that are going on for the live crowd and for everyone involved. So you could be a little bit more invested in it. And I just like those things. I remember telling you before that I felt not enough outside backstage shit is going on. Like it
you don't get that anymore. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Even something small like that, I appreciate that they tried it. If you're not watching Raw regularly, at least now you're invested in the angle for a small reason. These people don't like each other and they threw each other's hats and Yankees, Boston, et cetera, et cetera. So it starts with Team Bad in the ring, and then Nikki comes out with her two cronies.
And, her shitty sister and Alicia Fox.
Yeah, and they make it a Red Sox versus Yankees thing. And unfortunately, yeah. Naomi's delivery of her lines is horrendous.
Oh, you caught that.
She goes, going all the way. How is that working out for you lately? Like, she was, like, channeling her inner Rikishi. What the fuck was that about? You know what I mean? Like, you married into the family, right? You're not related. It's like relation by marriage. What is this? Like, go back and watch. Anyone who's listened to this, go back and watch when she delivers her lines. And she literally goes, going all the way. How is that working out for you lately? It was like, seriously? Did that really just fucking happen?
But then even when, like, in the awkward part when Sasha goes, why are you always lying? And then, like, she chimes into to finish it off. But then, like, they cut her off because her timing was off.
Yeah, this is like, I expected one of them to go, all your base are belong to us. You know, you can't tell me you didn't expect all of a sudden here, you know, going all the way. How is that working out for you lately? All your base. Belong to us.
Just end it off with I did it for Sasha.
Yeah, you know, like, what is that about, man? Like, geez. And then there was this awkward collision in the ring with Brie and Naomi at one point where Brie's trying to, like, I don't know if she's trying to run into her or forearm her. They just sort of collided and nothing happened. And they just need to do something.
I honestly think that was supposed to happen. Like, it was planned like that.
I don't know. Like, Brie's trying harder, but she still needs to tighten it up. But to make a long story short, Sasha goes over with a backstabber into the bank statement combo on Fox, as always. Mm-hmm. And like I said, you know, overall, the people that were good were good. The people that were bad. Naomi needs to do something about that speech, though, man. I didn't know what the fuck was going on. Like, when she started speaking, I didn't get it at first. I think I was looking down on my phone, and hearing her made me look up. Like, what the fuck's going on up there, you know? Like,
geez. That she was having a stroke on air.
Yeah, it just seemed off. It just seemed a little bit off.
She got nervous.
I did it for the Bellas. or rather, I did it for Team Bad. She's a bad woman. Bad, bad woman.
Oh, shit. I actually used to like that theme. It was just strangely very low.
Yeah. Well, now she's the bad woman. I'm a bad woman. Bad, bad woman. And then we had the Summer Rae segment, which when you think things couldn't get any fucking worse, right? Talk about giving divas a chance here. She calls Rusev down to the ring, and they made us watch Summer Rae, Rusev in
that
a fucking
disgusting video package.
In a horrible love video, man. I couldn't believe it. I was thinking this is the worst. You know, I was really thinking, like, quoting Bret Hart, it's the shits. You know, but then it kept getting worse and worse after that, because then it was like, sometimes Rusev has this look on his face that's just like mine. Like, even he's surprised at where this angle's going. Like, he's looking around.
I went from a powerful brute to this.
You know, and then, of course, just to make matters worse, she gets down on one knee and proposes to Rusev. And then Rusev is corpsing, because at one point he looks like he's laughing, like he can't contain himself because of the absurdity of this entire situation, that it has come to this. You know, because when you're a guy like Rusev, like, imagine if he's not someone who regularly watches WWE, which means, just assuming, because I don't know if he did or not, but imagine that he has, like, no concept of just how drastically an angle can change. Like, you'd never guess if you were this Russian guy that's big, big and tough and doing this, that the next thing would be Summer Rae on her knees fucking proposing to you. You know, but then again, he was throwing a fish down the ramp a few weeks earlier than this. Maybe he's already understands and gets what WWE is. But, you know, it still surprises me, and I've been watching my entire life, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I kind of saw it coming when she said she has something she wants to say, but the part of me that doesn't want this to suck was hoping that that wasn't going to be what it was. Like, I'm just thinking too much. She's not going to get down on one knee.
Now, as soon as she said it, I was like, she's not going to tell him anything with Dolph, because Dolph's going to come up looking like a heel in this. So she's going to ask him to marry her.
And you know what? Thanks a lot, Rusev, you asshole, for giving women an answer that I've never thought about them saying to a fucking proposal before. Think about what he said. He said, I say yes, but not yet.
I was even surprised.
Out of all of the proposals I've ever seen on television and shit, I've never thought about doing that. What a curveball. People usually automatically, because of the proposal, go, fuck, I gotta say yes or no right at this moment. This is a life-altering moment right here. The only two choices are yes or no. But nope, Rusev came up with a great one. He said, I say yes, but not yet. Imagine if women use that. First, you have to prove your love to me with gold. It's just so ridiculous. We must prove to each other that we are worthy, with his exact words. If I don't win the title, I don't marry you. And then he walks off.
But not even, he walks out to the apron and then holds it open so that she can leave too.
It's like, let's go, wife-ish.
He was like, what? I think that is fair.
That is awesome, man. That is awesome. Bad segment, but that's still awesome. And then finally, we get to the main event, which I told you that I was hoping to be surprised by who it was. I thought maybe Sami Zayn. I thought maybe Samoa Joe. This is the John Cena U.S. Open Challenge. I'm thinking, who?
I told you Heath Slater.
Yeah, and you said Heath Slater. And I said, dude, I would like be legit mad if it's somebody like that, because they've been building this up. Like, it's not like the regular Open Challenge. There's like, who could it be? So I thought it was going to be something cool. But it was all right that it was the New Day. I do like them, but I thought for the Open Challenge, that was weird. And it's funny that John Cena is getting like a lot of boos for being in Boston, like a lot more than most
people. His hometown, yeah.
Yeah. So then it's going to be Dolph Ziggler at first, but it turns out that he's beat up by New Day because they come out carrying his body, dragging him along.
I thought that was cool. The irony of it all was Biggie started his career as the bodyguard of Dolph Ziggler.
And now they're taking him out. Yeah, I always look at things like that too. And now they're dragging him along and stuff. And I told you, these guys, now that they're humorous, they need to be a legitimate threat. So they bring his body down, and Big E becomes the guy to fight John Cena. And it's a good match. Very well done. Everyone gets their shit in. It looks really good. Big E, remember back when we used to watch him in FCW and NXT? He looked like he was someone who would be good in a main event scene if used properly. Like with all the comedic stuff, we used to like him. They were using him more like a King Kong Bundy with the five count and everything.
With the five, yeah.
You know, and I always thought that that was very excellent.
I mean, that was his theme song up until the point where he joined the New Day, when he was like, three ain't enough, I need five.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it's one of those things. A lot of people didn't get that reference because of the fact that they never let that carry over to the main roster. But it was well done. I thought the match was good. He's a great performer. And then, of course, the ending, which you saw. What did you think of what happened? Because I know this basically turned into the chaos of what looked like New Day becoming serious heels.
There's that, and then it also leads into the whole Ziggler-Cena feud.
Yeah, because he winds up accidentally hitting Cena when he comes in to save him from New Day, because New Day's jumping him. And then basically New Day gets the upper hand on everyone, which was funny. They take out the Dudleys who run in, they take out Ziggler, they take out Cena, they leave everybody laid out. I think they needed that, though.
Don't sleep on those guys.
Exactly. Like, it's not so funny now, huh? That's what I was thinking when they were leaving. You know, that was something that was done properly. You see what I mean, though? Good writing, good development. Even things that aren't great are good. They're going somewhere. You know, we feel payoff when we watch this. I don't feel like I was cheated, like with some other places.
You don't seem like you were bound for glory.
I was wondering how you were going to get that in there without saying your name.
I was sitting here and I'm like, how can I get it in there?
Oh, that is ridiculous. All right. Well, I think we can wrap things up now, thankfully. We covered a lot of stuff, covered almost everything. I watched some Noah recently. I'll talk about that next week and a little bit more New Japan. And of course, we're going to catch up on our Ring of Honors and give our feedback as far as all of that stuff goes.
But, yeah, because there's one thing bothering me with Ring of Honor, but we'll get into that later.
Yeah. And tomorrow night at 8 p.m., we will be on The Rant, which is the flagship show of rantemradio.com, which we are now a part of. That's going to be fun. We get to shoot the shit and talk to everyone there and, yeah, talk wrestling and stuff of that nature. If you're listening to this on The Rant, that means you probably already listened to the other episode, taping and all that. You know, if you're a TNA fan, you know what happened. You know these taping schedules are weird. But yeah, I had a lot of fun with this, man.
Yeah, yeah, it panned out to be way longer than we originally planned.
Yeah, well, Walking Dead was good. Everything was cool with that. We'll see what happens next week. We're not, we haven't announced anything about who'll cover the new episodes or how it's going to work, but we'll get that all sorted. It's a busy week.
We'll figure it out during the week.
Yeah, right now it's like the important thing is just to get this done and dust it. Yeah, well, overall, I think my favorite thing of this week was probably the WWE Raw more than the Madison Square Garden. I think Raw was the best thing.
I don't know. I like the Madison Square Garden just because of the whole the camera feel and everything.
On that note, we're out of here.
See ya.